From Brick, New Jersey. Originally grew up in Essex County in Verona, New Jersey. And, I've been an old-time radio fan since I can remember, maybe 5 or 6 years old. Believe it or not, my first encounter with any kind of radio show host was Gene Shepard. And he used to be on WOR at, I think he came on at 10 or so, 10:30 at night. And I was supposed to be sleeping, but of course I had the radio on real low so nobody else could hear it except me. So I wasn't going to bed till 11 o'clock after he ended. But my favorite old-time radio show is The Shadow. I got into The Shadow when he used to be on the old jazz station, WRVR in New York. That's where I first heard The Shadow. And they used to have it on, I think it was the weekends. And I used to listen to the shows all the time. And been a real radio fan my whole life, pretty much. I'm also a ham radio operator. I'm into the old-time radio scene. I like all the shows. But as I said, The Shadow is definitely my favorite.
In this case, we're outnumbered. Three people from New Jersey on the same night in the same place. How'd that happen? Good evening, Nick. It's glad to have you. I'm Fred. I'm glad to have you with us.
And I don't know, I haven't seen if Joni is up here yet, but she's from Edison, New Jersey, and is an old-time radio junkie. And it's great to have you, Nick. You're sounding very, very good.
Nick Valla, as I live and breathe. You never know who you're going to find in this place. This is terrific, Nick. It's Joan Leonard. Some people call me Joni. You can call me whatever you want. I saw you... Was it at a... Were you at a Friends of the Library meeting or state ACB meeting or something, I think, maybe? And I saw you a few months ago, I think. So anyway, it's good to have you with us. This is a Thursday night chat room that we all look forward to. It is so much fun. Who's the third person from New Jersey that's here now? I went through the attendees list pretty quickly. So who is the other lucky person being from the garden?
Hey, Joan, just wanted to say hello to you. And yeah, it was that one. I think it was the NJCB meeting a few months ago, one of those things that I saw you at. And yeah, it's great to be here. And we're doing well. And I'm not always able to get here on a Thursday night because sometimes I'm doing other things with my music group, rehearsing or putting a show together or any of those things. So tonight happens to be an off night, so I figured I would check in. So I'll let go of the control key here and let someone else talk. But hi, Joan. Nice to hear you as well.
I think I need to make an apology. I was thinking that John is from New Jersey, but he's from Massachusetts. I'm sorry, John.
I was reading I got some biographies in sound, and I was reading about Babe Ruth, and it somehow I was thinking of John because he was, of course, Babe was with the Red Sox from 1914 to 1919, and, of course, when he was traded, put the famous curse on the Red Sox, and they didn't win a pennant for many, many years into the century. I was so glad when they won, and I remember reading the book, Wait Till Next Year or something by Doris Kearns Goodwin, who was a great Dodger fan until they left her, and then she moved to Boston and became a Red Sox fan. And when they lost in 86, she was crying, and her children kept saying, "Mom, it's okay. They're going to win it next year." She says, "No, you don't understand. There's a curse on the Red Sox." And but anyway, I'm hearing about the Babe Ruth documentary, and it's quite interesting. I know a lot about him, so but he was bigger than life.
Yeah, well, a few years ago, they were trying to dig up his piano that they believe is in some pond around here. However, they haven't succeeded with that. I did want to say quickly a couple of other things. By the way, Bob, I actually did accomplish recording that thing the other night. I don't know how much use I'm going to get from it or anything, but I did record it and I was able to play what part of it that I did listen to back later on. So, success.
Yeah, I don't sit and listen to all of it, but sometimes Gary Filroy comes in with some great information about websites, or some of the rest of you do too. And when I'm recording, I'm not doing it now, but I'm going to shortly. When I record it, then I can kick back and go back later and read about it. But Gary and Matthew will be back hopefully on the 15th. I heard from him. He says hello to everybody. Matthew Bullis of Phoenix, Arizona. And he should be hopefully back on February 15th.
I just wanted to say that we got the interview with Jim Dolan posted on the archive, Radio Out of the Past archive. When we were doing the interview last week, I didn't realize that my voice was so low compared to Jim's, and I didn't know that until I listened to the MP3 recording that I made that night. So next time I do something like that, if somebody would please put it up on the chat, on the text chat, because I was looking at that, and I could have adjusted my volume. I can do that, particularly when I'm having an interview, because I've got more than one microphone going. Because it was on MP3, I fooled around with the levels so that my voice comes in as if I'm still in the same room with him instead of being eight counties out. And that's what's on the archive. In addition to that, I sent it to my friend Mike Wheeler in Kentucky so that he could listen to it. And he got so jazzed about it that he has installed it on a hidden page on our website so that the rest of the actors of ART can pull it down and listen to it. So the word is getting out from this particular venue.
Well, that's really great news. It was a great interview, and I certainly apologize for not going. I never thought of it. I thought you had one mic, and I thought I would be complicating your life, but I should have known that you can technologically adjust to it, and I'll do it next time. That's great. It was a great interview, and Jim Dolan is quite a guy. He really is performing a great service. Joni reminded me that they're not doing Yesterday USA on Sundays anymore. They do other things, and that's their business, but the radio reading services, religiously, many of them will play REN, and ACB Radio plays REN. I have to go up and get the stream. Robert just told me how to do that, and I've got to go do it this week. RENonline.org, he told me where to go on there to get the stream, not where to go. I'll step away a second. I think I hear groceries coming. I got to help my wife put them away there. I shall return.
There is a series. I'm always starting something. And he was talking about Babe Ruth a while ago and things like that. There is a radio series called The Adventures of Babe Ruth. No, I don't have it. But it's out there. And for those Babe Ruth fans, they might find it quite entertaining.
I have a feeling that I've heard that at some point. But I'm not sure. But I just want to say hi to everybody, because I neglected everybody when I was talking to Nick. But hi to everyone. It's Joni Leonard. And Bob mentioned Biographies in Sound, and I think that was such a superb series. If you guys have heard it, great. If not, try to listen to it, because it was an hour of biography. An hour biography of individuals, from Will Rogers to Fred Allen to, I mean, wonderful people. I heard one with a woman, one of a woman who a lot of you probably don't remember, by Gertrude Lawrence. And it was just so, so good. I would like to get my hands on that. OT or Now, if anybody ever listens to that, they have some very, very good things on there. And I love that site.
I thought you said we could call you anything we want.
OTR Now is outstanding. Rick really makes an effort to reach all areas, all radio, old-time radio fans. And he was working with Mike Wheeler on the Gildersleeve thing. I think he's added to Mike's collection. And they both collaborated, and they sell, I think I bought the discs, 17 discs of the great Gildersleeve. And I just love them. I don't hear them all at once, obviously, but I can pick and choose, and it's just wonderful.
You can call me anything you want, John. John, by the way, did you find out anything about the job that I heard that you applied for it and I applied for it, and I guess several other people did? Have you heard anything yet?
You can call you anything just as long as we call you, right?
No, I haven't. Have you?
Yeah, Joy, that's right. Yes, I didn't get it, but they told me that they wanted to keep my file so that... No, they didn't say they were going to put it in a circular file. That's what I thought they said, but they'd like to keep it on file because you never know. One day they might decide that they really want me after all.
Yes. Devin, welcome. I'd like to welcome you here. And I saw some posts. I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah, you and Kurt Yount. Yeah, and, you know, Canadian drama. That's something we're going to have to get... have you prepare something? I know you might be able to do it on your site as well, the Katra site, but certainly Radio Out of the Past, if we get some of the stuff to Jim Ruby, we can get an hour or two of Canadian drama. I'll bet he can very easily.
Okay. I can help to do that. I have some here, and of course I'm right into Canadian OTR, so I'll be happy to help in that situation, and I'm also happy to report that I've been in touch with Danny Goodwin today, and looking forward to next week, and I'll need to get together with Fred because Danny wants like a Q&A type thing, so I've got a few questions I want to ask him first, and then we'll throw it open for discussion. So he was hoping that we'd be able to queue up some of the commercials that that he talks about in his articles. So I'm looking forward to doing that, and I'll have to, I'm sure that there'll be one or two nights that I'll be staying up really, really late, because once I get going on these things, I never know when to go to bed. But I'll enjoy it so much that the time will just disappear, and I won't worry about it until I have to get up the next day.
Good evening, Devin. I'll help you out with a little Canadian OTR. I've got 2 episodes of Blair and an episode of The Queen's Men that I'm going to play tonight. That's an hour of Canadian drama for you.
Yeah, I know we're going to get those. That's fine. But I thought if Devin has a couple of programs, obviously we wish we could play many more, but... a couple of programs. I'm sure Jim can get them up archived somewhere on our website. Just plug it, you know. And I'm excited about the commercials. I'm sure you and Fred will decide which ones you're going to play, and Danny can maybe, I see him anyway, giving background on these or commenting on some of the commercials. And I think it's going to be great. So he's on for the 15th of February. Let's hope Matthew returns. And Devin, if you could send me a little bit of a release so we all look good out there. We'll spread the word as far as we can. If you can send me something, we'll work it into our regular release.
I know that's one thing I'm going to want to be sure to take, that those commercials. So many of the shows, for some reason or other, that we hear now omit them. And yet it's so refreshing and nice when you hear those shows that have them in them. And it's nice to hear those old commercials.
Hi, everybody. It's Socorro. Hi, Devin. Hi, Bob, Fred, and the rest of you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to those commercials. They bring back old memories.
Oh, good evening, Socorro. John, are those old commercials that are still left around that are showing up at the start, finish, and middle of programs? We just finished, Bob is well aware, of a rather lengthy, no flaming, but a rather lengthy discussion in a researchers group about should they be left in or should they be deleted. And It went on for quite a while.
Yeah, I love the commercials, even the cigarette ones, because, okay, we're anti-smoking, many of us now, but that was history. And that's what I like about Mike Gorman. He was going to play something. I didn't hear it, ultimately, on his thing. He said, it's going to insult people, but this was the 1920s, and I'm going to play it for historical purposes. And I think as a historian, sort of, I like to call myself a historian, a little bit anyway, since I taught history for many years and love it, you got to be accurate. And those commercials were a part of it, a part of old-time radio. So I hope, I'm sure we're going to get some good ones. Anybody have any favorite commercials? Of course, the Philip Morris one. It comes out a lot to me. I mean, when I hear it, when you hear it, you just know what's going to happen. And Johnny Philip Morris is out there. I understand he started as a bellboy, and the story is told. Now, I don't know if this is just an urban legend that he said, call for Philip Morris, and somebody from Philip Morris heard him, and that was the beginning of his career.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm sure that will come up, and Danny has written a number of articles on various commercials, so maybe we'll get him to talk about some of those commercials and how they originated and things like that. And maybe Philip Morris is one of them. I have to look through them again. They're actually not on his website, per se. He has a link to another website, good-time.com. And that's where all of his articles are. So I'm going to have a look at those before I put the questions together that I'd like to sort of start out with. And Fred, I just know that you and I will be chatting between now and next Thursday. And yes, Bob, I will get a release out to you. And I agree. I do like the commercials in your program. They are history, that is true. But the other thing, too, is that it just seems so unnatural to have a program without commercials.
Call for Philip Morris.
Pretty good. That's pretty good. That's great. And let's see. I was going to ask something about Danny. Okay, do you need the phone bridge, Devin, or are you going to be able to do it? Will he be able to come into the chat room? And I'm sure Fred will tell you that we have the practice room open 24/7 on accessibleworld.org. Also, I think the radio room's open here. I don't know unless Pat's there, I think, and she can tell us. But I think she just leaves it open. So you guys could practice if he's going to come into the chat room. And if you let some of us know, we'll be in there. To love to meet him. Let me know if you're going to use the phone bridge, and we'll let Jim Ruby know. We'll clue him in.
Yeah, I was in the practice room yesterday for a little while. I go in through Radio Out of the Past. Actually, I go that way to all of the rooms because the way I go in, I get a menu of the rooms that I can go into. So I always thought that was Walter Tetley that did those Philip Morris commercials. I don't know why. It sounded a lot like him.
Just to answer your question there, Bob, we won't need the phone bridge. He will be coming in. He has a microphone and a sound card, and he'll be joining us that way.
You can enter. Actually, when you go into presenter, you are presented with all the rooms, I believe, but otherwise you go into accessibleworld.org/Pat and all of the rooms. The practice room is not accessible from the archive, from the website Radio Out of the Past. Nor is it accessible from accessibleworld.org. You do need to go into the other area. And also can send you the direct link for those rooms if you need them. And they're yay long.
The guy's name was Johnny. I think it was Fossentini or something. I'm not sure what his last name was. But he was a midget. And it's funny because they always said cigarettes wouldn't stunt your growth, but they used a midget in the store windows, and looking out at you from store windows and billboards is Johnny Philip Morris, something like that. But when you hear that in the Grand Canyon Suite, it just brings back, we heard so many Philip Morris commercials, and now I can't stand them because Well, I think they're an awful company. But I love Johnny and the Philip Morris commercials. And it kind of feels like you're sort of home when you hear that stuff, because if you heard it as a child, you sort of grew up with Johnny. And I also love the Kent cigarette commercials. And Winston, remember the controversy? Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. And we all said it should be as a cigarette should. But I guess Winstons were pretty popular. And I remember one time they had All Gold, I believe it was, tear and compare. And you were supposed to tear one cigarette and then compare the way the tobacco was put together in the cigarette and compare it with your own brand and tear that one and compare your brand. Well, my mother, when I said, "Oh, Mom, why don't you try that?" She says, "I'm not tearing any of my cigarettes apart. I'm smoking them."
Of course you would. Devin, I wanted to let you know that I seem to have two MP3 CDs that seem to be Canadian. Would you like me to send them to you in case you have there's something on them that you don't have? If so, go ahead and send me an email so I don't forget to do it.
Because it was awful hard to take the commercials out of the Jack Benny show. They were always added into the show. And those were good songs that Don's group had.
And I think the same situation would be with the Johnson's Wax commercials and the Fibber McGee and Molly show, John. And Joy, yes, that would be lovely. I love that. And I will send you my my address. And also, Socorro, I'm sorry, I meant to say hello to you and anyone else who has joined. In the meantime, speaking of cigarettes, I think I've mentioned this before, but I have to keep mentioning it because every once in a while someone new comes on and you just never know what people have come across since the last time I mentioned it. I'm looking for, and I don't know whether this was a Canadian cigarette or whatever. Mostly they were called Sweet Caps, but I think the real name was Sweet Caparals. And I'm looking for commercials for those, for that kind of cigarettes. And I'm still looking for that Eno jingle that I've talked about. I have a couple of White Rain commercials. I'm also looking for Sunlight soap commercials. And I don't mean the liquid or the powder. I don't know whether it's available in the States or not, but here in Canada, you can still get Sunlight soap in bars. And Aunt Lucy, which was the, not the spin-off, but the Canadian version of Aunt Jenny's Real Life Stories, for quite a few years was brought to us by Sunlight soap, which was the bar. And the fella used to start the commercial, "Let's all sing a Sunlight song." And that's one I love to get hold of. And, oh, I wanted to tell you, Bob, that I've been reading the great radio soap operas. I fell asleep last night listening to the chapter on the guiding light, so I'll have to go back over that. But that gives me an idea that something like that needs to be done for some of the Canadian programs. There aren't as many Canadian soaps, so I'd probably have to put other shows in. But something along that line of book needs to be done here in Canada, I think. And one of these days, I'll see what I can do about that, because I like to write anyway. So there's another of many projects that I'm thinking about.
Hello, everybody. You can hear Bob in the background talking to someone else. But I've got connected with a salute to commercials from someplace, I think in Michigan, and they said that the first commercial was in 1926, and they also recorded it. It was for a soap product.
This is Pat, and I grew up with Johnny in my playroom because my dad had a grocery store, and, of course, he had the cardboard image of Johnny, who was a Filipino, and so when they got tired of having the display in the grocery store, I got to take the cardboard home, and so it was a stand-up cardboard, and so Johnny of Philip Morris was always a part of my play.
Oh, that's interesting, Pat. I didn't know he was Filipino. I forget his last name. It was maybe it was his stage name, some Italian name like Tarantino or something. Somebody could look it up. But he could be Filipino if you say so. I believe you. Devin, yes, you should do some writing on Canadian soap operas. That would be interesting. And Mickey, good to see you here. And I missed your comment. I'm embarrassed. I was distracted on commercials. But we love them, and they're just so important. And I think you said you hooked up with something out of Michigan. Anyway, I'm recording this, so I will hear you what you said. But anyway, glad you're here, and glad all of you are here. But commercials are a lot of fun. Of course, the Super Suds does everything. DUZ was a big one when I was growing up.
Is that anything like Cold Water Omo? Oh, well. Anyhow, I ran across a commercial that I downloaded in the past week that is from Thomas Edison's film company, dated 1898. It's a 28-second commercial for Admiral Cigarettes. Of course, it's silent, but it does have some piano music with it. But I thought it was rather unique, an 1898 filmed commercial for a cigarette.
See, that goes to show, even way back then, they were thinking about selling as much as they could and as often as they could. It's a good thing they didn't have too many radio programs back then, or TV. Hey, Pat, that thing must be worth something now. I hope you still have it.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt your conversation there. Mickey, that place in Michigan, is it a website that you found? And if so, would you share it with us?
I think she said it was, but she can do that. But I wanted to correct her if I can. I don't mean to, but I think Ernie Hare and who's the other one, Joni? Weren't they selling socks? Wasn't that, or was that the first singing commercial in 23 or 24? So, they, you know, I don't know. But Ernie, they always play it, and I forget the other guy that sang with him. But I'm sure one of you guys will think about it and tell us.
I've been listening to SF68, which was a BBC presentation, and they have some commercials with that. Biotex, which seems to be a washing powder, washing thing. My friend in England tells me it's still there. But they also mention Grandpa's Headache Powder, and I'm real curious if that's still around. Certainly weird commercials coming from Britain.
Boy, this is a grandpa that could use it.
Joy, we're going to have to get you to play your favorite programs sometime here, early March. We're still around and going strong. I think I have Rob up for the 22nd. And then, we're getting to, where are we? February, not the 29th, obviously, March 1. So we'll have to do that. And Socorro, if you're on, what was one of your favorite commercials? We want to hear some of them and see what you guys come up with here. Of course, there's which soap floated? Was it Ivory Soap and Camay for the Beautiful Woman? And Mickey said that Lux is still out there, Lux Soap, and that's really interesting.
Ernie Hare and Willie Dandruff, that was the two that sang.
Well, let's see. I remember when my kids were babies, I used to use Ivory Snow to wash all their clothes. Wonderful Ivory Snow. I think they sponsored Aunt Jenny for a while, if I'm not mistaken. But gee, you know, there's so many good ones. I have to really kind of decide which one is my favorite.
I have a serialized drama CD that we got through the distro, and there is a program on there that's sponsored by Ivory Snow. But you know, the one thing that I've often wondered about that is, I wonder what the difference was between Ivory Snow and Ivory Flakes. You remember that there was also Ivory Flakes as well. And does anyone have, I've got a whole MP3 CD of Pepper Young's Family, but the one disappointment I found was that I couldn't find any Cam-A commercials on it.
Let's see, where am I going to start here? It was Billy Jones and Ernie Hare. They were, for a while, the interwoven pair, but I don't think that they were the first singing commercial. They might have been, but I don't think so. But I just had to make that correction. Gary, you're really quite a wise guy with the dandruff. Use Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You know, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. See, I didn't sing it. Aren't you glad? And there was something else I wanted to bring up. Fred said something about cold water Omo. Yes, we know about that from the Avengers. And, I'll let somebody else do the talking.
Well, thank you. I thought it was Ernie Hare and then Billy Jones. I don't know. I'll go with either one of you guys on that one. But it was the interwoven pair. That's what I do remember. And I thought they billed them as the first singing commercial, but, you know, who knows? Maybe Fred can look that up sometime for us. But anyway, commercials are exciting. I'm trying to think. I did not hear Jack Benny, for example, when Great Nuts Flakes took over the show. I probably didn't hear it when Jell-O was on. I'm more Lucky Strikes. I was involved in that then. I don't remember Jell-O. But and less so with Great Nuts Flakes. Orson Welles took over for Jack Benny for about 10 weeks, and it was interesting. He wasn't as good as Jack, though.
Okay, to answer Devin's questions, I think that Ivory Flakes were just the soap, and I believe that Ivory Snow had brighteners or bleach or something like that. And the show that I got from WinMX, which is not a good thing probably, but I'm sure they're out of copyright, and it's just a salute to commercials, and it's about 45 minutes long.
I don't know much about the difference between the two styles of Ivory, but I do know that my father used to take the Ivory Snow and mix it up with, bear with me here, it's been a couple days, beer and water, and made crystals, ice crystals. This is in Los Angeles, so it's imitation, of course, for our windows at Christmas time. You just applied it directly on the grass, glass, and that's what he used to decorate, at least for the outside, when lighting wasn't a big deal back in those days. So, but that's what he did.
Brought to you by Yum Yum, the peanut butter that's really creamy.
Sticks to the roof of your mouth, right? I kind of, that's pretty good. Anyway, let's see. Wonderful Ivory Snow. I won't sing it, but I remember that part of Ruth Ann is singing in the background. She sings much better, and she's got the melody. So that's probably what you heard, Socorro, on that. I thought some bakery, baking goods, sponsored Aunt Jenny, but I could be wrong there. Spry, yeah. What is there? Are these things still around? Like Spry and Crisco, I guess it is around. But Spry, Rinso White. And Rinso Blue. I wonder if they're still around, these things. I don't know. And Devin's been looking for, was it White Rain? I think it was. On that, Fitch shampoo. I don't use it, so I use shampoo, but I don't use Fitch. Okay, let's see what others come up with here in this topic, or I'll change the topic. That's certainly fine.
Hello, everybody. I don't know. My favorite commercial, I suppose, would be the cream of wheat is so good to eat it. Eat it every day, you know, from Let's Pretend. And I like a lot of them. You know, Spry, I think that was a Lever Brothers product. Of course, Crisco was Procter & Gamble. But, yeah, I mean, I remember Ivory Snow, Ivory Flakes, and all that White Rain shampoo. And I guess it was something called Dream shampoo, but White Rain, I guess, was a Tony's product. I don't know if Dream was Procter & Gamble. But also there was Prel, I guess, Head and Shoulders, but I don't use that since I heard somewhere that that was a that causes you to lose your hair because of you know, it's a detergent shampoo. That's why I don't use that anymore.
Well, Prel is still around, and there was Luster Cream shampoo. There were just such neat names, you know. And then there was Does Everything and Oxidol.
Halo shampoo with Mr. and Mrs. North. Devin, I believe, you guys can quote me on this or correct it or whatever, White Rain, it's either Nora Drake or The Brighter Day. I'm not sure, but one of those two was sponsored by White Rain, and if you can find a show, then you might find a commercial.
Well, that's good. Okay, I do have a disc of Nora Drake. I've listened to a couple. But I don't remember White Rain there. And Danny Goodwin, actually, the show, he didn't even like soaps, but when he listened, apparently, the show that got him into old-time radio to begin with was The Brighter Day. So he had, I think he had 5 episodes of it. He has a website actually devoted to The Brighter Day. And he had 5 episodes, and I had one that I had bought in a set from somebody. So I sent it to him on tape, and I was so thrilled because it was one that he didn't have. And he had sent me some Eno commercials that Henry Morgan had done, which definitely wasn't the Eno jingle, and also an Eno commercial that was aired the day after Pearl Harbor, and the recording is not great, but it's there, and that's not the Eno jingle that I'm looking for either. And he had a couple of Mum commercials, and then he has since told me where else I can find some Mum commercials. Anyway, I will look in the episodes of The Brighter Day, and this is Nora Drake that I have, for White Rain commercials. And yes, Dreen was Procter & Gamble, and so was Dreft. That was a dishwashing detergent. And up here, when we had Aunt Lucy, when you folks had Aunt Jenny, there was a time when Aunt Lucy was brought to us by Surf, which I believe was also a Lever Brothers product. And now I'm going to run another couple of cigarette brands by you. Cameo, I'm just wondering if you folks had that down there in the States, and also Du Maurier. Du Maurier does sound kind of French. So those two commercials I remember. And once again, I won't sing them for you either, but I could. So anyway, I am slowly finding out where some Canadian commercials are. One of these days, I hope to put together a CD of Canadian commercials.
Du Maurier's, yes, they were, but I remember their television commercials. I don't remember them on radio. And I'm being remiss in my duties here, John. Pat posted a couple of replies to you, and one to Bob as well. If you want me to read them, let me know, or otherwise they're right there in the text chat.
What is Eno? Sorry, but I never heard of that one.
Oh, it's Eno, actually. E-N-O, Eno, when you're feeling low, Eno. I promised I wouldn't sing, and I did it. It's Eno Fruit Salts. It was actually, on Danny Goodwin's site, it calls it a laxative. I never thought of it as a laxative, but it was I thought of it as like a stomach remedy, like Alka-Seltzer.
Bob, this is Larry. I don't know whether you're hearing me or not. I have a bit of a hum in my machine, so bear with me. It's good to visit with y'all again, listen to you. The earliest commercial that I recall was, I have a cassette with a recording of a 1926 commercial of a male quartet singing, "Why Don't You Buy Wheaties?" And it was, you know, it's supposed to be the first commercial broadcast on broadcast radio. Uh-oh.
Devin, I just wanted to say that was a beautiful rendition. You have a nice singing voice.
Yeah, I think you sound pretty good too, Devin. You don't have to worry about that. I think you sang pretty good.
Yes, Devin, actually you could be making commercials. Maybe that's a new field for you to go into.
It might actually bring in a little bit more money than what I'm getting right now. And I'm doing three things. Anyway, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I don't usually sing other than in the shower, where, by the way, I use White Rain shampoo and Sunlight soap.
Well, you know, it's so, this evening is so good. I remember listening to Aunt Jenny, and Danny Seymour would always go into Aunt Jenny's kitchen. She was always cooking something or baking something, and it always seemed so real, you know, and you could practically smell those cookies baking and those pies baking and everything. It's a good thing that it wasn't real, because we probably would have all demolished everything, and then the consequences would have been, well, not so good.
And that generation of males, say the guys that were born around 1940, in that general area, seemed to think that women should be in the kitchen baking all the time.
Now, I wouldn't say that. What's for supper? Anyway, I've got a thing of Hilltop House, and I will hear it this week just to check the sponsors. I'm not dead certain on just where that White Rain was. I know I've got it, but I've got a few odd ducks, like the affairs of Peter Salem and Hilltop House and things like that. And it's stuck in one of them, I know. I just got to figure out which one.
I never quite made that comment, but I did say that it was better for the kids to have mama at home.
Well, Mickey, you were so right. And when you listen to the commercials from that era, it was always the women folk who were in the kitchen and they were cooking for their men. And, I mean, heaven forbid that a boy should pick up a dish towel or help mom with the dishes or do the dishes. That was always the girl's job.
Well, at least they had a man at home to cook for. That was the war era. A lot of them were off to war or even worse.
Where I went to school, the guys did dishes just as much as the females.
I just wanted to say hello to Larry. We did hear you, and we don't want to think you to think that we were ignoring you. And it's good to have you with us. And I hope that you'll enjoy our chat and also the three programs that Fred has lined up for us. So by all means, welcome Larry and anyone else who might have joined us.
Yeah, this chat room, welcome Larry, this chat room and anybody else that I didn't welcome. But this chat room is really we're kind of like a family. We've known each other, many of us, for quite a while now, and we've been in this room, and this is kind of like a Thursday night ritual, except when some of us can't always attend. But anyway, Joy, I wanted to ask you something. I got an email from you talking about CDs that were available, and you didn't, I guess with the art, I don't know if they were recreations or what, and what the cost of them are, and then you said something about an additional $5 donation. And I don't know, I was reading it early this morning, and I don't know if I didn't quite understand how that works. So could you explain that to us, please?
This was an email from me to you? And you were seeing this morning? I don't remember sending this out. So I'm a little confused. If you can, why don't you send it back to me? And then I can be puzzled at home.
Actually, Joni and Joya, I think it was maybe sent from Joy to Bob Acosta, and Bob sent it out to the Blind OTR Friends list. It had to do with the recreations, Joy, that you have available on CD that you do through ART.
Okay, because I recently, well, Marilyn Wilt, who was the secretary of ART, wanted a bunch of CDs to sell to folks at her company. And I decided I would build a list of the CDs that are completed and what they were. Within ART, as a fundraiser, when we're generating CDs, it's a $5 price to ART. That's where all that came from. And if anybody wants anything, let me know and we can work on that.
Okay, that sounds very interesting.
Okay, and the discs, were they not $5 a piece? Is that what I'm hearing, reading? I have to read it again.
Well, since we're a really beginning group, we don't have a huge amount of treasury, and we invite some old-time radio folks into town twice a year, and in order to generate some funds to make that happen, the board of directors has decided that this would be a way to generate funds within the group. I don't see why we couldn't do it that same price elsewhere as well. It's just we haven't really got it set up. I can certainly make it happen.
So how much are the discs plus the $5 donation? Is that our understanding?
I think that's what it's going to be, yeah.
Certainly fair enough for me.
Was there a list in that email of what was available? Because he didn't put it on the radio out of the past discussion list, just the blind OTR list.
Well, I didn't know it was going out at all, so... Because I had sent it to the ART actors, and then I just CC'd it to Bob. So, yeah, it's certainly not a hidden thing. As I say, this is what we have gotten accomplished so far. And, Bob, you can go ahead and send it out to the rest of it if you want.
Well, I did send it to OTR discussion. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I'll look for it and do it again. Sure. And the reason I said it is because I'm excited. I think your price is low, but I know you did it for your group, and I see that. But, you know, whatever way you guys can raise funds for your good work, I'm always behind good fundraising projects.
I think $5 is too low. I think you should make it 7.
Oh, at least 10 or 15. Maybe 7's nothing. Anyway, whatever. She's saying 5, and if they raise it, I'm sure she'll tell us.
I'll work on this and send you an official kind of thing, I promise.
Okay, and I promise to distribute it and say this is the official notice. So that's good. That's cool.
Well, Lorenzo's watch was beautifully done, and certainly whatever we paid for that was well worth it, and I believe it was $15.
When Pat said Lorenzo's watch, I thought she was going to say something about Lorenzo Jones, which I just love. So so I guess wrong at what you were going to say, but Lorenzo Jones was a very charming kind of bittersweet tale.
Bob, Larry Lumpkin has posted, "Hi, Robert. I sent you our address again." Apparently, he's having an intermittent microphone. It was working there for a couple of minutes, but it's been mostly dead air when he keeps his mic open.
Thanks, Larry. I hope you just sent it email, but if I'll look up here in case it's there. But I'll try it again. I'm sorry. These came back, and I will send them out tomorrow. I have them all ready, and I apologize for the delay here. I have three discs for you, if that helps a little bit here.
Since no one else is talking for the moment, I do not have the Philip Morris cardboard life size of Johnny. Unfortunately, it would be worth, but I discarded it along with all my other childhood belongings. As I grew older, I decided I didn't need that part of my past, I guess. And Bob, the only thing I know is that the tobacco reps always said he was a Filipino. I really don't know for sure, so if anyone knows differently, please accept that as the correct answer.
Yeah, that's fine. I think of the box tops we had to send in for Send Your Thin Dime, and you get these prizes. The underwater of the Nautilus, which sunk in my bathtub, but it was supposed to do things underwater and glow and do all kinds of things. The weather ring, they had some little paper in it. If it was green, it was going to rain or whatever. And just a lot of prizes that as kids, you just, "Mom, can I have a dime, you know, we want to send it in." And it was usually box 688, St. Louis, Missouri, or something like that. And Tom Mix had a lot of them.
Even your different soaps had glasses and towels and washcloths. And you used to get something back in those days. Today you don't get anything.
Well, that's true. And Gary, I meant to meet Gary Filroy. I meant to mention thank you very much for having a look for that White Rain commercial. And John, that reminded me of a soap that used to often have towels and I think face cloths in as well. Breeze. Anyone remember Breeze? What program did that sponsor?
I don't know what it was on, but one of the come-ons to go to movies in the 30s was that they would give away dishes. And my mother got her complete set of dishes from going to movies, and glasses and bowls and the whole bit.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, they used to give... that might have been before I remember, but they used to give prizes like at movie theaters, all kinds of things. And that's neat. Today, my wife had a bowl in the kitchen with... I found out it had salad stuff in it, but it was one of these lockable things, and it came unlocked. And oh my gosh, you got to be an engineer to lock it. I finally did, but it's ridiculous. Bring back the old Tupperware; it just snapped on.
And I wonder whatever happened to green stamps.
Oh yeah, I remember green stamps. But these things, Bob, were anybody who bought a ticket got a specific piece of dishware that week.
I got my roller skates with green stamps.
All right, and blue chip stamps. We usually collected or got green stamps. I forget where you got them, but every place would give green stamps, and then you'd go and redeem it for goods. And yeah, they've disappeared. That's too bad.
And not only were there green stamps, you could redeem. But how about cigarette coupons?
And it seems like I remember that, too. And I remember these S&H green stamps. I guess we had that store called Market Basket that had them. Or, well, you know, Breeze, you know, the Cannon towels that were in Breeze, I don't remember what shows they were on. But in later years, I remember Dolly Parton and Porter Wagoner used to do a Breeze commercial on the radio sometimes. You'd hear it. Yeah. But I mean, they went up into the 70s, I think, probably. I don't know if they still make it or not.
Raleigh, the cigarette pack with the coupon on the back. And people would save up the coupons, and you'd get more coupons if you bought a carton or two cartons. And then when cigarette commercials stop being allowed to be on. I remember somebody saying very, you know, very ironically, yeah, coupon for Raleigh's. What did I get for all my Raleigh's coupons? I got cancer for all my Raleigh's coupons. So it was kind of awful. But I did have an aunt that smoked Raleigh's and collected the coupons, and she got all kinds of stuff. I don't remember what she got, but I remember her telling us that she got things for them.
Yeah, people did get prizes from Raleigh, and then people would come to me. The Raleigh said, get a man a seeing eye dog, collect enough coupons, and that very misleading. The seeing eye school, I think, what, $150 for your first dog? That was a lot of money then. And then 50 for the rest of the other dogs. I think I'm correct. And many of the schools don't charge at all. But I won't get into that. I support seeing eye. I think some of the notions are good. But anyway, moving on. But they used to say get, you know, to get a blind man a seeing eye dog, get Raleigh cigarettes.
I used to hear, you know, take those little red things off the pack and save them, and that would help get a blind person a seeing eye dog. I remember that. Some cigarette companies, up until at least a couple of years ago, were still giving an extra carton for set amount of tops that you sent in. But that, and that was just within the last couple of years. I see that they've even stopped doing that now, though.
Yeah, there is a show, Tales of the Texas Rangers. We're going to have to ask one of our great engineers to play it, called Blind Justice. And they train the dog to work on the right side. And in those days, it was like 1936 or something, Jace, you know, Joel McRae, said, look at his hand. It's calloused because the dog was on his right side. And I know the schools can do it, but normally the dog, my dog, works on the left side. But I thought it was interesting. And the dog, of course, was very heroic. It was a very tragic story.
There were a lot of urban legends around that you could get blind people a guide dog by saving things from tea and things from cigarette packs and all kinds of stuff like that.
And, of course, you know, the another commercial, you know, the giant of the cereals is Quaker Oats or Quaker Puff Wheat and Quaker Puff Rice, the only cereal shop from guns.
Yeah, you're talking about guide dogs. I can't resist this one. It always comes up. There was about 4 or 5 years ago, a guide dog over in England had 13 different masters. And he would he'd take these blind people, and one of them he led off a cliff. Another one he pushed down a construction site thing, killed him. And it listed all of the various ways that he had gotten rid of the different blind people. And my buddy asked him, said, what was his name, Kevorkian?
That's funny, Gary. That dog should have been on the shadow. That's funny. That is a really funny story. I've written up there, I hope it's still up there, Ralph's at myradiostore.com. This is where you write to Ralph Stewart, who's supposed to get to the engineers at XM dealing with accessibility. I don't know what's happening, but people around the country are writing him, and let's see if he can do anything for us, or they'll do anything for us.
Oh, my. You know, they'll do anything some places to get rid of a blind man.
Yeah, there's a dangerous dog, Gary. I mean, boy. Yeah, I wouldn't want to stay away from a dog like that.
Oh, I don't really think it was real. But as long as it's not the blind women, I guess I shouldn't worry too much.
Oh, boy. Okay. No comment to that. In 10 minutes, we have our stroll down memory lane. And I'll ask Fred to prepare a good trivia question or two, if he doesn't mind. And we'll be happy to do that. Everything else is kind of quiet. I don't really have any major... the latest is Anna Nicole Smith died, but she's not an OTR actress. But anyway, that was very sad. But I don't have any news of old-time radio from California anyway, from this end.
Such a shame for someone 39 years old.
You know that Frankie Lane died. He was 93.
When did Frankie Lane die? I didn't know that. But I know I was watching Dr. Phil this afternoon and kind of just halfway listening and doing some other things. And then they say, breaking news from South Florida, Anna Nicole Smith was found dead. And, oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. But I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Who knows what was involved? I mean, the whole bizarre thing with her son, and poor woman did go through a lot of different things in her life, and now this poor little infant, where is she going to go?
Gary, thank you. That certainly was big news a couple of nights ago. Frankie Lane was 93. Glad you brought that up. I think a great singer, a great talent, and late into his 80s, he was still making records, a little more gravelly, but he did some Rawhide commercials, or a commercial like Rawhide, I think, in the 90s, and quite a guy, Frankie Lane.
Yeah, they said it was heart failure, but at 93 years old, who's counting? I always liked Frankie Lane, too.
I got some Frankie Lane and Joe Stafford around here somewhere, and I've got his greatest hits.
Oh, that's so neat. He was a wonderful guy. He was always so good. I always loved Frankie Lane. And Joe Stafford, oh, she is the best.
I downloaded Gary's Joe Stafford song. Oh, she was wonderful. And sadly now, I think she's still alive but doesn't appear before groups. I think they've tried to get her to come to Spurdvac conventions, and she won't do it. And it's too bad because she could certainly sing. Paul Weston did her arrangements, and Gary's got a lot of them.
Yeah, I found four of his Joe Stafford albums. My all-time favorite. I've got other more contemporary favorites, but she's my all-time favorite. I grew up with Joe Stafford's music. Frankie Lane lived in the Point Loma area of San Diego for a good number of years. That's probably where he was when he died.
I don't know if any of you knew it or not, but at one time, one of his favorite places was Boston, and he used to mingle in with the college kids in the park.
Yeah, you found my four, but you haven't found the big old Joe Stafford collection, which is, I think, about 300 songs, something like that. It's on a CD. I'll have to put it up for you on the drive. And then I've got Portrait Edition, which is a three-album set, and a bunch more single albums of Joe. So I'm pretty well fixed on Joe.
Eddie Fisher was one of my favorites.
I am a Joe Stafford fan, have been for, I'll bet 55 years. I would give my eye teeth for those albums.
Well, Mickey, I can dig out one disc. I have a lot of songs. I think I have it's on Gary's site there. It says Joe Stafford on his FTP site. That's the one I got. I don't know about other things. But Ruth Ann and I, all day, one day, I think a Saturday, just heard Joe Stafford all day long. It was very good. I'll dig it out. Let me see if I can find it. I know I have it. She was good. No, Ella Fitzgerald is my favorite female singer, the queen of song. But everybody has their favorites, and that's what it's all about.
I didn't know anything about Joe Stafford, but ART has a series that we have been trying to perform. We have 8 of the 11 episodes, or 9 of the 11 episodes. And somewhere along the line, Joe Stafford's I Love You song ended up being the theme song. Now, of course, we have no rights to it, so we can't really use it, but it really does fit this series, very much post-World War, young couple trying to get along with their in-laws.
Yeah, okay. The name of that disc set, Bob, is called Yes Indeed. That's the 4-CD box, and the other one is just a collection of tunes that we put together from several CDs. But this one is called Yes Indeed, and it's a 4-CD box.
When someone mentioned Eddie Fisher, and one of my real favorites is Oh My Papa. I really like that song.
A beautiful song, and you know, it's. I'm glad to see that somebody mentions that name. A lot of people don't even mention his name because of the fact that he divorced Debbie. I don't care what they say. He was a great, great vocalist. I also would like to say that my favorite, in fact, I had a crush on her, was Teresa Brewer.
Oh, she was cute. Absolutely, John. I think a lot of people had a crush on her. Joy, I wonder if you can get permission to use it. I've seen different things. They'll say with permit, or Spurback will say it, with permission of the writer, we were able to use it, or I think FOTR does too. And it's a shame if you found the perfect theme song. I would hope the publishers or something would give you permission to use it.
Anybody know about Jonathan and Darlene Edwards, a.k.a. Paul Weston and Joe Stafford, where they did parodies on songs, and she could not quite carry a tune, similar to Florence Foster Jenkins, but so, so talented to be able to do that. I mean, that woman, Joe Stafford, probably, along with Ella Fitzgerald, who I also like a lot, but I think I like, well, maybe I like the Meekly. I love, love, love Joe Stafford. And if you listen, her voice is so absolutely perfect, and her phrasing and everything. People always said that about Frank Sinatra, who I really never liked that much. But Joe Stafford's phrasing, absolutely superb.
Well, what I liked about the Darlene Edwards, and I wish I could find some and I can't, is that most people go flat, and she went sharp. It was hysterical. We used to have between choir and Milwaukee choristers that I was a member of, and afterwards we'd go and sit in a place and have a couple and listen to this, and everybody'd be in hysterics.
Mickey, there's a real art. As an artist, I can speak. We used to just be around home and jiving, and we would sing flat deliberately. It wasn't quite down to the next key, but it certainly wasn't up to where it was supposed to be. And I mean, it really sounded awful. And you can go sharp as well as you can flat, but when you see somebody like that, they really, really, really have a good relative pitch at least. And that's hard to do, to stay, particularly if your instrument is playing along with you and you stay just that much sharp or that much flat enough to be noticeably off. It's hard.
I'll bet it is. It's not for me because I do it normally, so it's pretty easy. I think we're ready to take our stroll down memory lane with Fred Bertelsen. And so if we can all back away from the controls. And we'll turn the mic over to Fred Bertelsen of Mississippi.
Hi, everybody. It's good to be back here again, as if I ever leave this place. I think I'm in here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But I've got a couple of Canadian shows for you tonight, and I'll start this here in just a couple of seconds. Hi, everybody. Are you ready to take a stroll down memory lane? Got some great programs on tap for you here tonight. Tonight, we'll continue our stroll down memory lane, visiting more of the Mounties of old-time radio. First, we'll take a look at Flair of the Mounties. Flair of the Mounties is the story of the Royal Northwest Mounted Police before World War I. This serial was broadcast for 15 minutes every Monday from January 31st through October 3rd, 1938. We'll listen to two episodes from March in order to hear a complete story. In this story, Inspector Blair is visiting his sister and brother-in-law in England and gets involved in solving a murder. So here, from the CBC on March 21st and March 28th, 1938, and featuring Colonel Rhys Davies, is The Hamilton Mystery.
Oh. Flair of the Mounties, a story of the Royal Northwest Mounted Police. We present the 8th episode in Blair of the Mounties. Inspector Blair is on leave in England. Our story opens at Barminster, the quiet old county seat of Western Hamptonshire in rural England. Below us, as we look from the windows of Ashley Cottage, we see the winding streets of the quaint old city sleeping in the haze of a summer day. Ashley Cottage is the home of Colonel Markham, Chief of the County Police. His wife, Peggy Markham, is the sister of Inspector Blair, who arrives today from Canada.
Here you are, driver.
Thank you kindly, sir.
Hello, Peggy. Here we are.
Hello, David boy. Why, you look just the same as ever, not a day older.
Well, same to you, Peggy, old thing. You look positively juvenile.
Oh, flatterer.
Oh, my soul, Peggy, I mean it.
Oh, do come in, Jimmy, and let me have a good look at you.
Where's Marco?
Oh, he'll be here soon. Do sit down, Jimmy. I've got such loads of questions to ask you.
All right, give me time. You know, Peggy, I didn't realize I possessed such a handsome sister.
Oh, you old humbug. Do sit down and behave yourself. How long have you got, Jimmy?
3 whole months.
How splendid. But where's your uniform?
Now, Peggy, you're a colonel's wife and you expect me to come parading round in uniform when I'm on leave? I haven't even brought it.
How ridiculous of you. I'm disappointed.
Too bad. Well, Peggy, it's wonderful to be in England again, and the country looks gorgeous.
But really, Jimmy, things are awfully bad in England.
It's going to the dogs, I suppose.
I'm afraid so.
Of course, always was, and I suppose it always will be. Good old England, she seems to thrive on misfortune. By the way, I forgot all about this husband of yours. How does he like police work?
Oh, I don't know. It's rather a change from the army. He works very hard.
Oh, I see. Here, Peggy, chief constable of a county in England is supposed to be a soft job, you know.
Yes, I know, but Marco takes things seriously. There are lots of new angles in the police business, and you and he are such good friends. I want you to help him.
Oh, that's priceless, Peggy. A humble detective inspector advising the chief of a big county.
Oh, but darling, you've had a tremendous lot of experience, and you're making quite a name in Canada.
Oh, I say, easy on Peggy.
You see, Jimmy, that's the side of the work that Marco needs help with. He's got a beast of a man under him, a superintendent named Cota, who's always trying to steal the spotlight.
I see. Well, perhaps I can give Marco a lift. That would oblige, I'm sure.
Oh, Jimmy, I knew you.
Although, don't forget, I came over here on a holiday.
Oh, is he?
Really?
Ah, fine,
I'll
go right in.
Oh, here's Marco.
Hello there,
hello,
Jimmy.
Marco. How's everything, old boy?
Oh, pretty tranquil. Nice to see you again, Jimmy.
Yes, isn't it splendid? Now we'll have some lunch. I've got a bottle of real old Chateau Cam for the occasion.
Fine.
Come along.
Fine, come on.
that's all right. Let's go in. Well, here you are, Jimmy.
Thanks, Marco. Well, here's happiness.
The best of luck, Jimmy.
Good luck, Jimmy. You going back to the office, Marco?
Yes, but I'm having a day off tomorrow. What do you say, Jimmy? Like to try the Hamilton Reaches for trout?
Oh, splendid. Just what I've looked forward to for years.
The mayfly is rising. It's ideal weather. Ought to get some big ones in the spinny pools. Morning, Jimmy. How do you sleep?
Oh, like a top. I say, what a gorgeous morning.
Yes. Now, good Lord, I wonder what that is.
Marco.
Yes, what is it, Peggy?
It's the police car from headquarters. I think it's that awful man, Cota.
Oh, just my luck on a glorious morning like this.
Good morning, Cota. Anything wrong?
Morning, sir. Yes, sir. Serious trouble at the Hall. It's Sir John Hamilton. He was shot and killed just before 8 o'clock this morning, sir.
What? Sir John Hamilton killed? What was it? Suicide?
Afraid not, sir. I sent Sergeant McLean out on it. He telephoned a few minutes ago. Says it looks like murder.
Murder? Good heavens. Any other information? Any arrest?
Don't know, sir. McLean couldn't talk on the telephone.
All right. Oh, by the way, I have a guest I'd like to take along.
A guest? But that ain't oddly regular, sir.
That's all right. He's a policeman.
Oh, very well, sir.
Well, let's be going. How far is it, Marco?
Oh, a couple of miles yet. By George, there'll be a big stir over this. Hamilton was a big shot in the business world.
head of Associated Chemicals.
Do you know him personally?
No, he kept to himself a great deal. Peggy knew Lady Hamilton, a very fine woman, quite a figure in the sporting world. She used to be one of the best rifle shots in England.
I say, you don't think that she, Lady Hamilton, I mean, was the one who...
Oh, good Lord, I hope not. By George, that would be too terrible. But we'll soon find out. Apparently, McLean knows who did it. There you are. There's Hamilton Park ahead. Yeah. You can see the hall chimneys through the trees.
Joe, what a glorious place.
Yes. Turn in, Parsons. Drive up to the front door. Hello, McLean.
Morning, sir.
Oh, Blair, this is Sergeant McLean.
How are you, Sergeant?
Inspector Blair from Canada, Sergeant. Brought him along to give us a hand.
Well, sir, there's no need for any Sherlock Holmes on this job. It's as plain as the nose on your face.
Well, Coulter, you'd better carry on.
Yes, sir. Hello, what's this?
This is Morton, the hall butler.
Anything I can do for you, sir?
Better come along.
Yes, sir.
Let's have the story, McLean.
It was out here in the rose garden where Sir John was standing when he was shot. That window to the right of the porch is the breakfast room. Mm-hmm. The one on the left is the library.
Well, what evidence have you got?
The housemaid saw it from the breakfast room. Sir John was standing just here. He always waits for Lady Hamilton in the morning when she comes back from practicing.
Practicing what?
Well, you see, Lady Hamilton has a private shooting gallery in the grounds. Goes there every morning before breakfast.
All right, what else?
Well, about 7:50 a.m., Lady Hamilton comes back from the shooting gallery. When she met Sir John, they had a quarrel. Lady Hamilton was carrying her rifle under her arm. The maid saw her suddenly turn away, and she heard the sound of a shot. Sir John staggered and fell, and that was all the maid saw.
She didn't actually see Lady Hamilton fire the shot.
No, but two people saw her shoot her husband.
Now, who were they, McLean?
Well, the butler, Morton, here, and the housekeeper, Mrs. Bevan.
All right. Let's go in the house.
Just a minute, Coulter.
Huh?
I'd like to know if Inspector Blair has any questions.
Just one, if you don't mind.
No, no, go ahead.
I'd like to ask Morton here something.
Yes, sir.
Did you ever see Lady Hamilton do any shooting before?
Not likely, sir. She always locks the door of the shooting gallery when she's at practicing.
All right, that's all.
Well, sir, with all due respect to Sergeant Blair, I don't see what he's got to do with this here kite.
All right, I'll tell you. I've chosen to ask him to assist us. Is that clear?
Oh, very well, sir.
One more thing. McLean, what was the position of Sir John's body when you found him?
I don't know about that, Inspector. They'd moved him when I arrived.
What? Before the police arrived? What do you mean?
Well, you see, sir, it was me as moved him.
That's so, Morton?
Yes, sir. I was the first to get to him.
All right, what did you find?
Sir John, he was lying just here with his head on the flower border. I thought at first he'd had a stroke or something and was still alive. So Milner, the footman, and me, we carries him into the library.
Yes, that was reasonable enough. But didn't you see any wound?
Not till we got him inside, sir. Then we found a small wound at the back of his head. It was hardly bleeding at all.
I see. Then what did you do?
Well, I telephoned Dr. Rutherford, sir. He was here in a few minutes. By that time, we knew Sir John was dead. It's a terrible business, sir.
But when did you telephone for the police?
Well, as soon as the doctor came, sir, he told me to.
And all that time, you were with Sir John?
Yes, sir.
All right, that's all I wanted to know.
Beg pardon, gentlemen. Dr. Rutherford said he's ready for the police.
All right, I think we'd better go in. I expect they found the bullet.
You go ahead, Coulter. I want to talk to Inspector Blair. Jimmy, this is a bad business.
Yes, looks like it. I forgot to ask McLean, but I wonder what they've done with Lady Hamilton.
Yes, we must find out about that. It's rather a delicate business.
Coulter didn't seem to be very happy having me in on this thing.
No, but that's all right. Coulter's a good policeman, but this is his first murder case in years. Naturally, he wants all the credit he can get.
Oh, yes, that's natural.
Personally, I'm thankful you're here. Coulter's rather bullheaded, and we've got to be careful. Hello? What is it? Found something?
Yes. It's this little metal screw or cap. It was lying in the flower border. Wonder what it is.
Let's see it. Screw cap of some sort. Milled on the outer edge, with a hole through the center. Must be off some garden implement. Better turn it over to the...
Hold on, Marco. You know, I've seen a cap like this before somewhere. I'd like to identify it just for fun. If you don't mind, we won't mention it for the present.
All right. You don't think it's a clue, do you?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. Still, sometimes it's the little things that count.
All right. Let's go in and see what the doctors have got. Well, Coulter,
Did you get the doctor's report?
Yes, sir. He's the bullet.
Hmm, I see. Small lead bullet, pretty badly broken up.
Yes, sir. But the weight corresponds to the bullet Lady Hamilton used in her rifle. It's the same caliber.
I see. Tell me, McLean, where is Lady Hamilton?
Well, sir, she collapsed when this thing happened. She's in Dr. Rutherford's care. I was going to question her, but the doctor interfered. Said he'd be responsible.
Ah, good man, that doctor.
Yeah, that's all right, but we have to take her in charge.
Hold on, Coulter. One thing at a time. How about the doctor's report?
Well, there's not much to it, but it's plain enough. The bullet was lodged against her frontal bone, was the cause of death.
How about the gun?
Well, here it is. It's a .22 caliber target gun. Plenty of fingerprints, all made by the same person. Of course, the Lady Hamilton's.
I see. Any questions, Blair?
No, seems pretty straightforward. Can I look at that gun?
Certainly.
Thanks. Morton, you saw Lady Hamilton fire at her husband.
Yes, sir. I was standing.
Never mind where you were. Which shoulder did she fire from?
Why, the right shoulder, sir.
You sure of that?
Positive, sir.
All right. Go ahead, Calder.
Well, gentlemen, we have the evidence of two people who saw Lady Hamilton fire the shot. The maid and the footman saw Sir John fall. This is the rifle that had done it. And the bullet fits the rifle. What more do you want?
Yes, and the motive, Calder?
Motive? Why, bless my soul. Ain't there motive enough? What I says is that this here Lady Hamilton is guilty of murder. I say she ought to be charged. She's no more right to consideration than anybody else, lady or no lady.
I'm afraid you're right, Calder. And I'm sure Inspector Blair agrees.
Of course he does. What else could he do?
Well, really, Calder, I don't want to be awkward, but I'm afraid you'd have a bad time on a witness stand with a smart defense lawyer.
What? How do you make that out?
Really, I can't see your point, Jimmy.
Well, perhaps I can explain. But first, let me say this. That butler just now was lying.
What?
Why? How do you know?
Because it was utterly impossible for Lady Hamilton to have killed her husband.
You have heard episode 8, the first part of the Hamilton mystery. The second part of this story will be presented in episode 9 of the dramatic series entitled Blair of the Mounties.
Blair of the Mounties, a story of the Royal Northwest Mounted Police. We present the second part of the Hamilton mystery, being the ninth episode in the dramatic series Blair of the Mounties. Inspector Blair, on leave in England, finds himself plunged into a murder mystery on the second day after his arrival. Blair's sister, with whom he's staying, is the wife of Colonel Markham, newly appointed chief of the county police of West Hamptonshire. The murder of Sir John Hamilton, president of Associated Chemicals, causes a tremendous stir in the sleepy little old English town of Barminster. As the news of the murder spreads through the countryside, Blair forgets all about holidays and goes after a solution of the mystery. As our scene opens, we find Blair, Colonel Markham, and Superintendent Coulter discussing the crime in the library at Hamilton Hall.
I tell you, Coulter, Lady Hamilton didn't commit that murder.
And I tell you, you don't know what you're talking about. I've been in police work for 30 years, and I say she done it.
Just a moment. Aren't you forgetting yourself a little, Coulter?
I ain't forgetting my duty, Colonel Markham. This here friend of yours, Inspector Blair, well, he's got no right to come a-buttoning on this here job.
That will do, Coulter. I asked Inspector Blair to assist us. He has a lot of experience in criminal work.
Well, he may be all right in Canada, but this is England, and conditions is different.
Let's get back to business, please. I'm going to ask Inspector Blair to explain why he disagrees with us in the face of all this direct evidence.
Well, suppose we start from the beginning again and go over the ground. I'd like to talk to that housemaid and the housekeeper as well.
What good will that do with all the evidence? Why, it's simple enough. Sir John Hamilton was killed, wasn't he? We have two people who saw Lady Hamilton shooting. We got the gun she used, and the bullet fits the gun. What's the use of going over the evidence?
Oh, Coulter, I'll admit it looks as if you're right. Now, I'll make your proposition. You're a sportsman, aren't you?
Well, I hope so.
Ever do any fly fishing?
No. Never had no patience with that sort of work. Of course, I like to go fishing. Always use a worm myself. And when I get the fish on the hook, I just drag them in. No blooming nonsense about me.
Yes, I see. But when you come to catching murderers, Calder, especially with important people involved, it's very like fly fishing. You have to be careful.
I don't get you. Anyway, what's this here proposition?
I want to talk to the maid, the housekeeper, and then the doctor. If I don't prove to your satisfaction that Lady Hamilton is innocent, then I'll leave this case strictly alone.
Is that fair enough, Coulter?
Well, it's up to you, Colonel Markham, but I see it can't be done.
Bring that maid in, McLean.
Yes, sir. Come in, Jenny.
You're the maid that was in the breakfast room this morning at 8 o'clock, are you?
Yes, sir.
You saw Sir John Hamilton shot?
Yes, sir.
Tell me what happened.
It was just before 8 o'clock, sir. Sir John, he was a standing out in the little court, just outside the window.
Could you see him plainly?
Oh, yes, sir.
All right, go on.
Lady Hamilton comes along from the shooting gallery. She had a little rifle under her arm. Sir John, he always waits for her.
Just at the same time?
Yes, sir. Lady Hamilton, she was in an awful temper, and they starts quarrelling. And I says to me owner, I says, there they go, at it again.
All right, what then?
Well, all of a sudden, Lady Hamilton turns and walks away. And Sir John, he turns his back and stood looking out over the garden.
And then?
Well, we heard a noise. And Milner, he said it was a shot. Sounded more like the crack of a whip to me. And then Sir John, he staggers and falls on his face. Oh, it was awful, sir.
Now, when you heard the shot, could you see Lady Hamilton?
No, sir. She was out of sight behind the shrubbery. Oh, she never done it, sir. Oh, she wouldn't harm nobody.
Yes, all right, that's all, McLean.
Oh, I know she wouldn't. Oh,
you wanted me, sir?
Oh, Mrs. Bevan. Yes, come in, please. Sit down, Mrs. Bevan.
Thank you, sir.
You're employed as housekeeper at Hamilton Hall?
Yes, sir.
How long have you been in Sir John Hamilton's employ?
Why, ever since I was a girl, Inspector. I've been working at the Hall for 20 years.
Indeed?
Now,
Mrs. Bevan, I understand you told the police that you saw Lady Hamilton shoot her husband.
Yes, sir.
Where were you when you saw this?
I was here in the library, sir, looking through the window. I saw Lady Hamilton coming toward the house, and then I saw her turn. She lifted the gun to her shoulder, and, well, she deliberately shot her husband. It's a dreadful thing, sir, but there isn't any doubt about it. Morton saw it, too.
What did I tell you?
Just a minute. Now, Mrs. Bevan, this is the rifle that Lady Hamilton carried. You recognize it?
Certainly.
Mrs. Bevan, I want you to hold this rifle, just as Lady Hamilton held it when you saw her shoot her husband.
Oh, no, I couldn't. Too terrible.
Come now, Mrs. Bevan. It's only a little thing. Just a matter of form. There. That's it. Thank you. Then Lady Hamilton fired from her right shoulder.
Why, of course.
Did you ever see Lady Hamilton fire a gun before?
Years ago, I often saw her shoot.
But not since she had the special shooting gallery built.
No, sir.
And she always used to shoot from the right shoulder.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. That's all, Mrs. Bevan. Please tell Dr. Rutherford to step this way.
Very well, sir.
What's all the fuss about this here gun?
Did you look at that rifle, Calder?
Did I look at it? What do you mean?
Notice the wear on the woodwork? It's just opposite to what you see in an ordinary rifle.
What do you mean, Blair?
There's a rubber pad on the side of the butt for the cheek to rest against. It's on the wrong side. It's a left-handed gun used by a person who shoots from the left shoulder.
By George, yes. Well, what difference does that make? This here butler and the housekeeper both saw a shooter husband.
I wonder. It begins to make their evidence look pretty sick.
Only I don't know. She might have fired from her right shoulder, even with a rifle like this. I'll admit it does look different, but I don't see...
Yes, sir.
Dr. Rutherford, sir.
Oh, yes. Come in, Doctor. Have a seat.
Thanks.
How long have you known Lady Hamilton, Doctor?
Practically all my life.
You know Lady Hamilton well, of course?
Yes, I've been her physician for nearly 15 years.
Now, Doctor, I understand Lady Hamilton used to do a lot of rifle shooting. Then, for some reason, she gave it up, except for daily practice in a private gallery. Always with the door locked. Why was that?
Well, you see, 3 years ago she had a severe illness which affected her eyes.
With what result?
She practically lost the sight of her right eye. She's very sensitive about it, and it was a terrible thing to her then in another way. You see, she used to be one of the best shots in the country.
You mean she hoped to regain her skill in spite of this affliction?
Yes, that's why she had this enclosed shooting range built. She tried to learn to shoot from the left shoulder, but it was no use.
Do you believe she shot her husband this morning?
Well, it looks like it. I suppose it was just an unlucky chance. Ordinarily, in her present condition, she couldn't hit a house.
One of the servants states that she fired from her right shoulder.
Oh, but that's impossible. She's nearly blind in that eye.
All right, but that's the key to this case, Doctor. I believe she's a victim of a frame-up.
You mean that she didn't do it?
I'm certain she didn't, but there's a motive.
that I haven't yet established.
Ah, if there's anything I can do to help you...
There might be. Tell me, Doctor, about this Mrs. Bevan, the housekeeper. Would she have any grudge against Sir John or his wife, or both of them, perhaps?
That's an awkward question. I'd rather not be forced to answer it.
It may save Lady Hamilton from a trial.
Very well, then. This, of course, is in confidence.
Yes.
Mrs. Bevan had good cause to hate Sir John, and she certainly had a grudge against his wife.
On what grounds?
It's a queer story. Sir John has an only son and heir, a boy of 18.
What's that got to do with it?
Everything. Sir John was the boy's father, but Lady Hamilton was not his mother.
What do you mean?
His real mother is Mrs. Bevan.
What? Gracious. Even that wouldn't be motive for hatred.
Not by itself. But the boy has never been told the truth. Mother and son have been kept apart since the boy was born. Hamilton was a very, very cruel man in some ways.
Oh, thanks, Doctor. That helps a lot. I think we can clear Lady Hamilton.
Ah, that's good news, Inspector.
All right. Goodbye, Doctor. Thank you.
Goodbye.
What an extraordinary story.
Strike me pink. It ain't as simple as I thought it was.
You still think Lady Hamilton did it, Coulter?
Well, no, I'll admit it. It don't look like it, out of what the doctor said. But if she didn't, who did? It couldn't have been Mrs. Bevan.
No, it wasn't Mrs. Bevan.
Then who was it?
I think I know, Coulter, but I don't know how it was done.
So we're back to where we started.
Not quite. Holmes Lane.
Yes, sir.
I suppose there isn't another rifle of that same caliber in the house?
Not of that size, no, sir. But there was a rifle in this room.
What kind of a rifle?
It's a 303, Army pattern Lee Enfield.
That's no good. Too big.
That's right. You couldn't have fired a 22 bullet out of that. And not unless...
Unless what?
Well, not unless you used a Morris tube.
By Jove, a Morris tube, of course. Why didn't I think of that?
We ain't found any tube.
No, but I found part of it. That little screw cap that goes over the muzzle of the rifle. Remember, Marco?
By George, yes. Rather fantastic. But it could be. Yet you'd have to find the tube itself.
How are you going to do that?
Well, I think the best plan would be to have the murderer himself find it for me.
Eh?
Then we'd have the two together.
Well, you say, help me, Bob. I never heard such nonsense.
Look here, Timmy. This is no joke.
I'm not joking. I can prove that to you.
Well, all right.
McLean?
Yes, sir.
What policemen have you on duty here?
There's a man at the gate, one in the house, and another watching the garden.
All right. Leave them on till dark this evening. And you stay here, too. Then take everybody off when it gets dark.
What's the idea?
All right, I know what I'm doing. And another thing, Mac, when you take the men off this evening, tell Mrs. Bevan we're going to make a thorough search of this house tomorrow morning.
Oh, but look here, you're not going to leave this house unguarded tonight, surely?
No, not exactly. We'll all be back here at dark.
Oh, what for?
I want you to meet the man who killed Sir John Hamilton.
Inspector.
Yes?
There's somebody coming up the path now. It's a man.
All right, I'll talk to him. Good evening, Morton.
Why, good evening, sir. Didn't know you was here.
Oh, I'm just taking a look round.
Is there anything I can do for you, sir?
What have you got under your coat? Look out.
Take him, McLean.
Get a hold of
him. Hold still. The crime's up, Morton. The crime's up.
Have you got him?
I got him all right. I've had me eye on this here bloke all along.
Oh, Jimmy, I'm simply dying to hear the rest of that story. How did you know Morton would be there last night?
I knew he'd try to get that Morris tube out of the house before we searched in the morning.
But what is a Morris tube?
It's a long steel tube that fits into the barrel of an army rifle so that a smaller bullet can be used. There's a cap that holds it at the muzzle. I found the cap near where Sir John's body had been. Morton must have dropped it in his hurry.
How exciting.
See the report in the paper, Peggy?
No. Oh, do let me look.
Here you are.
Gracious, what does this mean? Clever catcher of murderer by Superintendent Coulter.
Eh?
Oh, dear, I knew that wretched man would steal the show.
That's all right. I gave him that report myself.
You what?
Best thing that will happen. There'll be no more trouble with Coulter. He thanked me with tears in his eyes.
Oh, I see. Well, thank goodness it's Sunday and we'll have a nice quiet day.
Sorry, I'm going out.
Going out? But where, Jimmy?
Coulter and I are going fly fishing.
You've heard episode 9 in Blair of the Mounties. Tune in for the next episode entitled The Cherry Hill Mystery.
Well, it's getting to be time to start for home. But while we're on the way, let's listen to another CBC Mountie. The Queen's Men Work to Solve a Murder Without Any Clues. Here from 1954 is the Duncan Underhill case.
I solemnly swear that I will faithfully, diligently, and impartially execute and perform the duties required of me as a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and will well and truly obey and perform all lawful orders and instructions which I shall receive as such, without fear, favor, or affection, of or towards any person. So help me God.
The Queen's Men. For the first time, authentic stories of the world-famous Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Tales of men who for almost 100 years have helped to keep peace in Canada. The Queen's Men. The Queen's Men. True stories of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Names have been changed for family protection. And now transcribe The Queen's Men.
So my little nephew says, what if you haven't gotten a clue at all to a murder? Where do you start?
Well, how did you answer that, Sergeant?
I explained that there's always some kind of a clue. There's always something.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I never run into one yet that didn't present something to go on.
Yes, Sergeant, well, that's a kind of good question. What if there weren't any clues, where would you start?
Guess I'll have to look that one up in the manual.
Reason I ask, you remember Constable Henry and that murder case of his out in Alberta?
No, what case do you mean, Bob?
Well, as I remember hearing it, there was one murder with not a single clue to start with.
Oh? How did it go?
Constable told me about it when he was visiting our headquarters a couple of years ago. I recall it because it looked so hopeless. Nowhere to start. Not sure if I remember how he handled every step of it, but...
Well, let's hear about the murder without any clues. Where did he start?
He started by being pretty generally bored. He was stationed out in the ranch country where all that ever happened was a bit of cattle thieving. Constable Henry was a man of action, and after a couple of months of inactivity...
Tell you boys, if something doesn't turn up soon, just anything with a little life to... I'm fed up playing nursemaid to a team of horses and straightening out the quarrels of a bunch of bush sodbusters.
Constable Henry here, he figures he joined the force for a life of solid adventure, and it's gone and let him down. What is it in particular you'd like to occur, Constable?
Like I said, just something with some life to it. I don't mind telling you, man, I'm bored.
Why, that's pretty near treason. Oh, who we got here?
Excuse me, busting in. Officer, can I talk to you a minute?
Certainly.
My name's Charlie Underhill. I just ridden in 30 miles from Aiken. Hey, listen, something awful's happened. Oh, dear. Do you mind if I sit down?
No, help yourself. What do you mean, Mr. Underhill? What's happened?
They found the head of a dead man back at my place this morning.
What?
Yes, sir, right on my property, just the head. I saw it. Oh, it was awful. I figured I'd better ride over pronto and let you know. I don't want to get mixed up in no murder.
Now, let's have his story straight. Who found it?
A friend of mine, Fred Jakes. He was hunting for turkey nests, Sergeant. Are you, Sergeant?
No, Constable. This is Constable Henry you've been talking to.
Oh, howdy. I'm glad to meet you. Yeah. Well, I don't mean I'm glad. I wish I didn't have to get mixed up in this at all. You know, you fellas, you start getting suspicious of everybody and asking a lot of questions.
Now, look, hold on now. Hold on. We have a lot of questions to ask. You're right about that. But we're not suspicious of you just because this was discovered on your property. Not unless you start acting suspicious. Now, you say your friend was looking for turkey nests.
Yes, sir. It looked like the turkeys had scratched up this head.
Did anyone recognize the features?
No, nobody knows them, and there's no one missing around our way. Gee, the That face sure looked awful. We figured the body must be around somewhere.
You didn't change anything or dig for the body?
I'll say now, we didn't touch a thing. No, sir. We figured it was a job for the police.
There was nothing else around?
Nope, nothing. No. Nothing but a black cap all covered with grease that my young brother Pete picked up a few weeks ago. Oh, he's wearing it right now.
Well, we'll ride back with you and have a look around.
Right now?
Yeah. Jack, you got the horses?
Yeah, right away. Well,
do you mind if I give my horse a drink before we start back?
No, help yourself. It's around the side.
All right, thank you, Constable.
Well, Ed, you remember what you were saying a few minutes ago?
What's that?
Wanted something to turn up, with a little life to it. Well, it turned up all right, but it sure doesn't sound very lifelike.
Wasn't turkeys that dislodged this turf. Take a look here, Jack.
What is it?
Look at these claw marks and the gray hairs. Coyotes have been trying to get at that body.
You're right.
And dig a little more in this direction, boys. A little to the left of where you are now.
I hope we don't have to dig too deep, Constable. We're starting to hit a lot of stones here.
Now my hunch is you're going to hit that body pretty soon.
All the earth I've turned over on this farm. Never thought I'd be doing this kind of excavating.
Come over here a minute, will you, Jack?
You find something?
No. I've just been thinking. You know, something puzzles me.
Yeah?
This murdered man is obviously a stranger around here. Not one of these farmers had ever seen him before.
That's right.
But the man must have been around here before he was murdered. Someone must have seen him alive. These sodbusters will pick out a stranger any time and remember him for months afterwards.
Well, of course, the corpse could have been packed here from a distance. The job may have been done, 100 miles away.
Yeah, but why take the chance of discovery by burying it right at a person's back door when the murderer had the whole wide-open prairie to choose from?
Maybe it's someone with a grudge against Charlie Underhill. Someone who wanted to throw suspicion on him. Maybe one of his neighbors, for all we know.
Yeah, you may be right. Maybe one of the same men who are digging for the body at this moment.
Hey, Constable Henry! Come here, we've hit something here.
Come on, Jack.
You found the body?
Yeah, it looks like it. Looks like blue jean overall he's got on there, too. Hard to tell exactly with all the dirt there. Keep shoveling, fellas. Go on.
Yeah, it's a body, all right. Looks to be still in a good state of preservation.
All right, keep going, men. We'll haul it out. Looks like we should find a few clues now, Ed.
Mm.
All right, men. I'll give you a hand with that.
Yep.
There he is.
Now, let's see what we've got. Well, the overalls have an Atlantic City tag.
Oh, fella came a long way to get himself murdered, didn't he?
Nothing much in the pockets. Country Fair badge, dated October 18th. A piece of quartz and a pipe.
So all we know is he probably came up from the States within the last 3 months, lived in Atlantic City, attended a fair last October, and was buried here sometime in April.
April?
Yeah. Look at that shallow grave. If the ground wasn't frozen, whoever buried him would have dug deeper. And the body couldn't have been buried last summer, or it wouldn't be in such good shape. I'd say the grave was dug early this spring.
Say, you're right there, Constable. You know, I tried to sink a fence post around the end of April, but when I got down a foot or so, I had to quit. Frost was still in the ground.
By the bullet wounds in the head, he was shot twice behind the ear. Whoever did it certainly did a good, thorough job.
It's terrible to think of someone committing murder like that, you know. And right on my property, too. Say, maybe it was a suicide.
Charlie, suicides don't, as a rule, bury themselves.
Oh, no, I guess you're right about that, Constable. By the way, I noticed you sent all the other fellows home after they dug up the, what's his name here? Nice of you to let me hang around. Must say it's pretty interesting.
I confess our motive isn't to provide you with entertainment, Mr. Underhill. The body was found on your property, and you mentioned your brother found a cap a few weeks ago. Was it around here that he found it?
Well, now, I never asked him. That's my young brother, Pete. Just an old cap, all greasy. But he started wearing it.
Perhaps he noticed something else. I'd like to have a talk with your family next.
Oh, sure. I guess they won't mind.
Jack, you might start questioning the neighbors again. See if any of them can remember seeing a stranger around here a while ago.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Now, we'll see what we can put together this afternoon and compare notes back at headquarters.
Constable, this is my sister, Muriel Underhill.
How do you do, miss?
Muriel is Constable Henry of the Mounties.
This is a terrible thing that's happened, finding what you did right on our property.
Yes, miss, I'm sorry I have to trouble you, but just a few routine questions.
Yeah, of course.
How many are there in your family?
There's Pa and Muriel and me and my young brother, Pete.
That's all?
Well, that's all, yeah, except
another brother of ours. But he left home 15 years ago after Mother died. I've looked after the family ever since. Oh, Constable, haven't you any idea who the murdered man is?
No, but I imagine we'll get an identification sooner or later. And this other brother you mentioned, does he ever come home?
No, he doesn't. He writes now and then, that's all.
What's his name?
Duncan. Duncan Underhill.
Uh-huh. Where does he live?
Oh, he moves around. We never know where he's going to turn up next. Last time we heard from him, he was at, I'm afraid I can't remember. Charlie, do you remember the name of the place?
No, I never saw the letter, Muriel. You lost it, remember?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'll try to remember, Constable, if you think it can help any.
No, I don't think it matters much. The main thing I'd like you all to do is to think back, try to recall if you saw any strangers around here about April. And then I'd like to talk to young Pete.
Not a thing, Ed. Not one of them remembers seeing anybody in April who doesn't live in that area.
Hmm. You think they're telling the truth?
Seems to me they are. What did you find out from the Underhill family?
Well, they don't know anything either. You know, I'm inclined to believe that these hard-working settlers wouldn't be implicated in a thing like this.
Hmm. And where do we go from here?
Well, I did get one thing. Not much. This.
Oh. What is it? Magazines?
Half a dozen of them. Sewn together with binder twine. The Underhill boy found them on the trail about the same time he found the cap, near the spot where the body was buried.
Let's have a look at them.
Well, I've already been through them. The only possible clue is this.
Yeah?
If you look very closely here, on the cover, the top one, see?
Yeah.
Faint pencil marks.
Oh, yeah. What, is it a name? I can hardly make out.
Yeah, well, now look under the magnifying glass. Here.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Well, it looks like N.L. What's that? Rainer, or...
L. Raymer. The I isn't dotted.
Well, as you say, it isn't much.
No. That name could belong to a total stranger to this area. The fact of it is, Jack, we have to trail down an unknown murderer with no clues other than a description of the victim, a greasy cap, and a bundle of magazines.
Well, if that's all we have to go on, I can only suggest that we get started right away.
In just a moment, we'll return for the second part of this true story of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Queen's Men. And now we return you to the Queen's Men.
Report to Inspector Jeffries. RCMP headquarters, Ottawa. I'm Constable Henry, Alberta Post. Search begun for slayer of man found buried on Underhill Farm. Accompanied by Constable Jack Howard, I first questioned neighbors in near surrounding area, then moved west, visiting farms and ranches, and inquiring about two strangers seen last April. Could give only description of murdered man and carried with us his clothing. Response, nil.
Sorry, Constable, but that stuff you got don't mean anything to me. Blue jeans,
Every man for 100 miles around wears blue jeans like that.
Yes, I'm aware of that. But look, this jacket is a little unusual. I'm hoping to find someone who remembers seeing a man wearing this jacket. Oh, yes, and there's the cap.
Here it is, Constable.
Thanks. I realize this cap is pretty standard, too, but it's all we've got to go on. So I'd appreciate it if you'd think back and try to remember if you might have seen a stranger around your ranch in April.
What did he look like, Constable?
Well, he was about 5'8", weighing approximately 170 pounds, sandy hair, blue eyes, thin mouth.
Sounds kind of ordinary. Not the sort of fellow you'd remember very long.
Yes, but he may have been in the company of someone else. The murderer. Well, we don't know that, of course, but we have no description of him. Look, please, try to think. Do you recall seeing a stranger or strangers in this vicinity about April?
Well, now, let's see. I don't... Well, now, wait. Yeah, there was a fella hanging around here.
Yeah?
Looking for a job on my ranch.
Yeah, what did he look like?
He... Oh, no. Nope, that wouldn't be him. Well, I come to think of it, that was a year ago, April.
Oh, I think we better move on, Constable.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk to Hank Alberton down at Crossroads Farm? He's a guy that remembers folks.
We've seen him. We've talked to everyone in the area. Well, thank you anyway, sir.
No, don't mention it. Good luck to you. Hope you find it.
Well, time to start on the towns, I think, Ed. Stores, banks, land offices.
Yeah, and restaurants and hotels.
All right, Becky. We're going to hit the trail again.
The horses like the search anyway.
Yeah. I sure like to get out.
No wonder people look at us as if we're kind of crazy. A bundle of clothes and no idea whether it was one man or two. No idea their names.
Except maybe Rayner.
Or Raymer. Yeah, maybe.
Well, Constable, let's not get discouraged. Sooner or later, we'll pick up this trail. Now, hold still, Becky. And when we do, it'll just be a matter of time.
Yeah, all right then. We'll start scouring the town, starting with Gold Creek.
Right.
He was short, with sandy hair, blue eyes, thin mouth. He may have registered in this hotel under the name of Rayner or Raymer. Please think back. It was probably in April. These are the clothes he was wearing. We believe he was from Atlantic City. Do you remember anyone answering that description, picking up mail here? It would probably be addressed general delivery. I'm sorry to bother you, ma'am, but if you could possibly remember anyone wearing these clothes coming into the bar around April. Short man, probably had an American accent. It'd help a lot if you could remember. I don't suppose there's the chance that you ever saw him.
Yeah, sure. I think I see that fella.
What? You do? Well, did he stay at your boarding house here?
Oh, no, but we used to eat at the same place. I remember on account of that jacket. I always liked a red jacket like that. I always wanted one. And I asked this fellow where he got it.
Do you remember what he said?
No. No, I can't remember where he said. Somewhere I couldn't get to, I think.
Atlantic City?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you taking this down, Jack?
Yes, I've got it.
Now then, look. Do you remember this man's name?
No, not his last name. We used to call him the Kid.
The Kid?
That was what his buddy called him.
Well, then there was someone else hanging around with him.
Oh, yeah. You're a big guy. I didn't like him much. Big 6-footer in black sombrero. Said they was looking for a quarter section around here. He was one of the Underhills. Duncan Underhill.
Underhill? Are you sure?
Yeah.
That's the one they say left home 15 years ago.
That's how I remember. This big fellow, this Duncan, he was asking about his family. Where they were living now.
And you directed him?
Huh?
You told him where they were living?
Oh, sure, yes. They got a farm about 20 miles
up. Yes, I know. Look, now, can you remember anything else about these men? Anything at all?
Like what?
Well, where else in town they might have gone, or who else knew them?
Oh, they only hung around a couple of days. Then I never saw them again.
Well, is there anyone in town who would know the name of the young man that you call the Kid?
Oh, maybe down at the pool hall. They used to play a lot of pool, maybe, I think.
Good. Thank you very much for your help. Your information's been very valuable. We'll be back to talk to you later. In the meantime, I'd appreciate it if you'd go back in your mind and try to recall every detail of these men, their conversation, appearance, anything at all.
Sure, I do that.
Jack, you go down to the pool hall, see what you can find out. I'm going back to question the Underhill family again.
Understand that, Constable Henry, and I just don't understand it all. My brother Duncan. Well, I ain't seen him in 15 years.
Well, you're quite sure of that, Charlie?
Sure. Well, sure I'm sure. I wouldn't even know what he looks like.
Well, that's a funny thing, because the man I was just talking to swore he was in town in April.
Well, how do you know it was Duncan?
Well, apparently your brother told him.
Then maybe it wasn't Duncan at all. Maybe some other fella. If he was the murderer, then naturally he might take another name, mightn't he?
Well, murderers don't usually take the name of an actual person whose family lives in the area. What does your brother look like?
Oh, well, now, 15 years ago. Oh, dear. Well, he was just a kid, Constable.
No pictures of him around anywhere?
No, not even a snap. Duncan, he never cared much about his family. Only Muriel, she's the only one he even ever writes to. And what... Oh, well, that's a funny coincidence. The letter came for her from Duncan just today.
Where is it?
It's right there on the table. She hasn't come in yet. Say, what are you doing, Constable? Look.
Is this the letter here?
Yeah, but wait a minute. It's addressed to my sister.
Well, I'm afraid I'll have to intercept this letter, Charlie.
Oh, just... You can't do that, Constable.
I'm authorized to do so. You say your brother had nothing to do with the crime?
Well, I'm positive. Do I look like I'm lying?
No, you don't. I've always felt you were telling the truth, Charlie. So if you are, then this letter can't do any of you any harm. But it might answer a few questions for me.
I didn't get much information at the pool hall, Ed. They confirmed the descriptions, that's all.
Well, I found something, Jack.
That letter? What is it?
From Duncan Underhill to his sister Muriel. Postmark McDermott, Alberta. Listen. Dear Muriel, I'm settled in here and found the piece of land I'd been looking for, so thought I'd let you know. Don't give anyone my address, but if anything interesting happens, let me know so I can keep up with things. Incidentally, if you happen to get a letter from a Mr. Roller...
Roller? Rainer? Raymer? Or Roller?
Could be. Letter from a Mr. Roller in Atlantic City, asking about his son... Forward it to me and don't bother mentioning it to anyone. Young Roller was thinking of buying in with me, but went back to the States several months ago, but before that night I dropped in to see you. He said at the time that he wasn't going home and his father might start hunting for him, so like I say, if you hear from him, I'll be glad to help him any way I can. That's all for now. Best, son.
Well, this doesn't prove Duncan Underhill did the killing.
But it certainly bears out the story that he was in this area and that he knew young Roller.
You think the victim is Roller, then?
Well, I certainly suspect it is. But I'm afraid we'll have to get the boy's father up here from Atlantic City to identify him. I've already wired him, sent the report to Atlantic City Police.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile?
Well, while we're waiting for identification, we'll contact the authorities in McDermott and make some inquiries about Duncan. It looks like we're getting warm, Jack, and about time.
Yes, that's my son, all right.
I'm sorry, Mr. Roller. Very sorry we had to expose you to this. Would you come into the other room now?
I've been worrying about him for months. He was always going off, getting one scheme or another. I never thought this would happen to him.
It's a vicious crime, Mr. Roller. And we're going to see that justice is done. You can be sure of that.
Anything I can do to help.
Did you ever hear your son mention a man named Duncan Underhill?
Underhill? No, I don't think so.
Tell me, why did he leave home?
He was coming up here to Canada to buy a ranch. I didn't want him to come all this way, but he said he'd been advised he could get a good buy up here.
Who advised him, do you know?
He didn't say. Just that it was a friend of his who lived somewhere around here, knew the country, knew the values. Someone whose family had always lived here, he said.
Well, that sounds like Duncan.
So my boy set off with all his money.
Money?
Yes. He just got a legacy from an uncle of his. $10,000.
Ah, there we are. Up to now, there's been no motive for the crime. $10,000 would be quite an incentive, I should think.
I've got some information on... Oh, I'm sorry, Constable. I didn't realize.
Now, this is Mr. Roller, Constable Howard.
How do you do?
What is it, Constable? Anything on Underhill?
Yes. He's going by the name of Tom Spaulding.
Uh-huh.
Got a ranch just outside McDermott. Bought it 2 months ago for $10,000 cash.
Hey, Jack, over here.
Oh, there you are. I didn't recognize you in your slouch hat and dungaree.
You look pretty good yourself. I don't think Duncan will spot us. That is, if he ever turns up at this saloon.
Well, they seem to think you'll show sooner or later.
You tried his ranch again?
Yeah, I just came from there. Say, what happened when you talked with Muriel Underhill?
Well, she finally broke down and confessed that Duncan dropped in at the farm in April, late one night. None of the others knew he was there.
So Charlie was telling the truth?
Yep, he didn't know a thing about it. The sister's pretty worried. I think she suspects Duncan did it, all right.
Hey, Ed.
What?
There's our man. Just came in.
Yeah, it looks like him. You're right.
Yeah, someone talking to him. We better wait until he's alone. Less chance of starting a brawl.
Come on, we'll stroll over towards him.
Sure, you do that, Harry. You give me a price on the steers and I'll think it over. All right, so long.
Excuse me.
Yeah?
Are you Tom Spaulding?
Oh, yeah. What do you fellas want?
You mean Tom Spaulding's the name you go by?
Well, sure, it's the name I go by.
Duncan Underhill good enough for you?
What do you mean?
All right, you just come along with us. I'm Constable Henry of the Mounted Police. You're under arrest for murder.
And that's the way it happened. Arrested him and proved him guilty, too.
One minute it looked like he didn't have a thing to go on, and the next they were hot on the trail.
When I tell this to my nephew, I wince when I think of his surefire remark.
And what's that?
And it's true, isn't it, Uncle, that the Mounties always get their man?
The Queen's Men, authentic stories of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Music under the direction of Sidney Torch. Script and adaptation under the supervision of John Adaskin. Produced and directed by Harry Allen Tower.
Concludes my presentation for this evening. I hope you've all enjoyed it and enjoyed the rest of the evening, and we'll see you back here next time. Have a great evening, everyone.
said, I love that music. That was just great, and your sound is very good on that. Thank you very much.
I almost started marching around the breakfast table.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I've been trying some different techniques and putting this together, and I think I've come up with the right combination.
You sure do. Fred, do you have any a trivia question? I kind of was in and out doing things. I hope you have one or two if you wish.
I think I could probably come up with my notes. I've got about three or four written down here. I know you don't want that many, but going back to the very first program, who was the murder victim in the Blair of the Mounties?
Okay, let me say, if you won recently, give it once a month so we give everybody a chance to win. So let's see how it's going. Who is the murder victim?
John Hamerton.
Sound like Devin. Fred, John Hamerton was the murder victim. Is she correct?
Almost. There's no L in that English that they were talking on that program.
So let's give it to her. It's pretty close. So, Devin, I think that was you. You are the winner. I'm writing your name here. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was John Hamilton. But for some reason, I noticed that nobody used the letter L when they were pronouncing that name. So I guess that's a British accent in there.
Congratulations, Devin. And Fred, as always, you have done a sterling job. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, great. And we'll stay on schedule, Fred. I guess that's the way the Brits do it. Do you have another question? And we're happy to give some more prizes away. Ruthann says give Devin soap operas, but she's got some. She's got soap operas.
Okay. Who produced The Queen's Men?
That was Harry Allen Towers.
That's correct, John. John Dietrich.
Okay, John. Yes, I see your name up here. I don't know if I have your address, John, so I'll put my email up. If you could send it to me, we'll send you something good. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. And Fred, thanks for the shows. Those were fabulous. I only have maybe three or four Queen's Men, and I didn't have this one, so this is great.
Okay, I put my email up there, John, for you in text chat, Alt-Y. You could go in there and look, and do send me your address. I'm sure you will. We'd be happy to send you something.
Wonderful. Thank you, Bob. We'll go get that address and put it in the clipboard and save it somewhere, and I'll send you an email.
Okay. There were only ever 21 episodes of The Queen's Men, so they're few and far between, hard to come by, even though they are from 1954.
And was this produced in the States then, or was this Canadian? Devin's going to climb on my case here. But I thought you said it was produced in New York or something. Am I correct?
No, Harry Allen Towers, who also did The Black Museum with Orson Welles and The Third Man with Orson Welles, among others that I can't name right off the top of my head, was in London. So it was produced by Towers of London. So it was a British origin made for Canada. I have an episode of Mystery Project. It's a two-parter that was also made in England for Canada, and it's from 2004, so they're still doing them.
So some of those accents even sounded American, that's why, or at least Canadian, or at the most Canadian, whatever. So that's interesting. Okay, so the British made it for Canada.
Well, I think it was recorded in Canada because those accents are Canadian. And John Adaskin, who I think was the writer, if I remember correctly, Fred, John Adaskin was definitely Canadian as well.
I wouldn't argue that either point with you, Devin, because I am not that up on the Canadians as far as writers and so on, but of course everybody's familiar with Grace Gibson, who's produced a lot of South African and Australian radio, who lived in the United States for a good number of years before she moved to Australia to open her production company, and a lot of her shows were syndicated and broadcast in the U.S. as well, and Armed Forces Radio carried quite a few of her programs.
Well, these guys on The Queen's Men, especially I was hearing, just sounded like regular people. They're good actors. I mean, but they were just folksy. They sounded like us, and I like that.
Yep, that's very true. There's a book that I love to read onto CD. I don't know how you go about that, Bob. It's called Coast to Coast, Personal History of Radio in Canada, and it's by Sandy Stewart. I could contact the CBC and see if I could get permission to read it. It wouldn't be professional or anything, but I wouldn't mind reading it. It's a four Braille volume book, and it talks a lot about a lot of programming, and of course a lot of the CBC's ups and downs as well. But if you tell me how to go about doing that, Bob, I'll see what I can do, and I'm hoping to get hold of an Olympia digital recorder, and I could read it onto that if I need to get permission to do that sort of thing. So let me know.
And Fred, that was wonderful quality. I mean, I have listened to a couple of Queen's Men's things, and it was so bad I couldn't listen to them. But the shows you did tonight, great quality. Good job.
It was a good job. You're absolutely right. Yeah, I just got is it SD50 or DS50? I don't know what it is. I get mixed up. The SD50, I think. And that'll do the job. It would do it with a good microphone. They give you, you can get a mic or whatever, and that'll record, I think, 17 hours. You would then put it up to your hard drive and burn it to disk and make a disk. And it might even record more hours. I'm not sure. Somebody who knows more than I do would know the answer there. A simple way is doing it on cassette, getting us the cassettes, and we can transfer them to disk. But to get it on a digital recording is obviously better.
And do I need to get permission to do that, Bob? Do you go through that channel, or will I just do my thing?
Sometimes we just do our thing. I'll be very honest with you. Sometimes we get permission. Some of them don't give answer either way. They'll just say, well, we're researching it, and if after several months have passed, I do it, because we give it free of charge. We do not sell the books or anything. So I don't know what to tell you. If you in Canada, if you think you can get the permission, I sure would ask them.
I'll at least try, and then, well, we'll see.
Didn't Sandy Stewart, boy, that name's familiar. Didn't he play young Dr. Malone? And he used to fly, he was from England, I think, or he used to fly back and forth from England a lot. I remember that much about him.
Sandy Becker played young Dr. Malone.
Thank you, Joni. Sandy Becker, that's the guy. You're absolutely right. That's the guy. Well, after I said it, I said, no, it's not Stewart. Sandy Becker.
There was a female singer, Sandy Stewart, who I always thought was about as old as I was. Maybe she was a couple years older. And she would be on different morning shows sometimes. And I was going to school, and I always thought, that girl gets out of school. I mean, you know, boy, how does she ever do that? Because, you know, she was a singer, and she got to appear on these shows, and she didn't have to go to school like I did every day. So probably she had to go to professional kids' school or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah, probably. Johnny Crawford was another one that was played on The Rifleman, and also recorded one song that I can remember. And, of course, the children in the Donna Reed show and Ozzie and Harriet and that sort of stuff. They must have had some kind of arrangements for them to get educated and that sort of thing. I wanted to thank Ruth Ann as well for thinking of me when it comes to soaps. And I probably have what Bob has because we would have gotten it from Fred. Unless, of course, you have the second Mrs. Burton or something like that. But if you're looking for something, Bob, Fort Laramie or Superman. I don't have any Superman except for a couple of Christmas ones. And so I really like the Superman television show. So any of those would be wonderful. Thank you very much.
I have, I have not forgotten Fort Laramie. I'm getting running it down. I have a copy and I can't find it, but a friend is going to get me another copy. And Superman, I have the radio Superman, so I can shoot you some. That keep reminding me again, but I have not forgotten Fort Laramie. It's on the way to my house, and I was going to forward it on, burn you a disc, because I'm going to keep a copy, and I'll burn you a disc, because they're good shows. But Superman on the radio, I have several of them. TV, I have DVD. I don't know if you can play DVD. I said somewhere I have DVDs on a few of the Supermen.
I just got Fort Laramie from Janet Chamberlain, who's former member of our group here. She works Thursday nights now, so she can't be here. But it's OTR certified version, and she happened to be the one to send it to me. I do look around and try to pick the best episodes I have of the various shows to play. I look more for quality than anything else. Some shows that it's just not there, but you know, sometimes we get lucky. Like tonight, I got three good shows. Quality wise, they were really great, and I appreciate that. And I know that's what you guys like to listen to, so. You know, a little distortion from maybe a crack in a transcription disc or something, that just adds to the history of the program. But some of these things are just so noisy.
Okay, getting back to your kids in school. Yes, there were several deals that arrangements that were worked out. Brenda Lee was a notable example of that. But what they did, they would let the child go at their own pace. In other words, it was like professional school where you made your own progress and you know, you got your work all right, but it wasn't the same old boring grind day after day. Can you write your name yet? No. It wasn't like that. Because the kids were making money, you know, as time goes. But yeah, throughout the that's Patty Ann and Daydream. Johnny Crawford had, well, I have Greatest Hits somewhere around here.
I like Johnny Crawford. Yeah, I remember he did sing a song, and I remember him very much on The Rifleman. I'm sure Gary Wood would remember that. Fred is the the certified discs of OTR researchers on archives.org, is that where you go look for them?
I'm not sure if it's been posted yet or not, but it will be up there very shortly. I don't know for sure. I do remember, though, along the lines of what Gary was talking about, I knew a kid when I was in junior high school. He was in my homeroom, named Barry Curtis, who was probably number three in the casting on Champion the Wonder Horse, the TV series. And he also appeared in 310 to Yuma. And when he wasn't in public school, he had tutors on the set. So they never missed a lick. They're always in contact with the teacher in education.
I'm going to say goodnight, folks. I really enjoyed it. And thank you, Fred, for playing those three shows. And take good care, and I'm going to run and try to catch the last 50 minutes of ER. So I shall see you next week. And, Fred, I know you and I will be chatting or emailing one way or the other to get this thing put together. So take care, everyone. Have a great week, and I hope it's not as snowy and blustery where you are as it is here. Bye.
Bye, Devin, and let us know if we can help in any way with your presentation with Danny Goodwin. We started 9 o'clock Eastern for his presentation, even though we started 8 Eastern, and we're really looking forward to it. It's terrific.
I just wanted to mention to Pat, if she is on, if not, it'll be on her recording, that the archiver left the chat room at 10 minutes before 9 o'clock.
I will make a note of that, and if you will see that Jim gets the files. That will be sufficient, Fred. Thank you.
Oh, wow, Fred. Thanks for noticing that. Usually he leaves, should leave around 10, the archiver, I would think, Eastern time. And I don't know what happened. But, yeah, thanks for sending it up to him, and he will get it posted.
Okay, Bob, just a note on the rifleman. You jogged my memory there. Chuck Connors was the first baseman for the Dodgers in 1950. He actually played in the majors themselves. I mean, he was a Dodger. And, of course, he and Johnny went on to bigger and better things on the rifleman. But I didn't know if you guys knew that, but he was. He was a regular Brooklyn Dodger.
I didn't know it was the Dodgers. I know that he played with the Los Angeles Angels Pacific Coast League team. So I assumed that he went up to the Cubs because that was the farm team. But if you say the Dodgers, interesting. Probably didn't play very long, though. He was a power hitter. He was a left-handed batter. And he was very well-liked. He was with the Angels a little bit into the summer, and then he disappeared. I guess he went back to the Dodgers or something before Gil Hodges. I don't know how that works in there, but that's interesting. Yeah. Kevin Patrick Michael Connors or something like that. He used to say he was a very well-liked player. Chuck Connors, they called him. Those were good shows, you know. I'm trying to get some of the reruns on DVD. I mean, you could follow them. They had morals, you know, moral thing. You had to be good and all that, and that was okay. And they were really neat shows. We used to follow those as kids.
If you will check Autra today, you might be able to look out. Paul has some very good prices on stuff. I think it's something like $10 a DVD or something like that. Anyways, it's not bad at all if you happen to have what you wanted. I don't know if he's got that one specifically. But if he doesn't, TV Milk, like the drink, TVMilk.com. has a good selection, and they've got Maverick and a whole batch of the ones. They cost a little bit, but hey, if you want them, pay for them.
Okay, thank you. That's why I'm glad I'm recording. See, I've got these websites, and I knew Gary would come up with one or two tonight, so I appreciate that. Tell Ron Staley, I wonder if he knows about TVMilk.com, because he really collects a lot of DVDs.
He does. He got Maverick for Christmas. Sue got it for him. From there.
Tony, are you alive? You there? Well, I think I'm going to bail out here because my wife was gone all day to a meeting and she wants to tell me about it. So we'll do that for a few minutes. But I'm looking forward to Devin's presentation. I know it will be A number one. She's very good at when she does something. And Fred, thanks for helping her. And well done today. You really solved the sound problem. You know, I thought the Queen's Men were right in my living room. It was really good. We have our laptop going downstairs and my other computer upstairs, so we covered the house with good old-time radio. So we'll see you guys next week. You're welcome to stay on as long as you want. And we're just kind of treading water, waiting. We hope that good things will happen with version 5, and when it does, we'll be back with symposiums and all kinds of things. Okay, you guys take it easy. Have a wonderful week.
Bob, if I can catch you before I go, I do not have a telephone, so I'll be in touch with you by email.
And, Bob, thank you. And be interesting to see what all of the commercials are that we're going to need to come up with.
I hope he can give us, well, I don't know what kind of background he'll give, but I guess the guy's really knowledgeable, and we'll be able to pick up on it and maybe tell us how long it was on the air. I don't know. But Devin seems to think very highly of him.
Okay, Fred, this would apply to you mainly now that Devin's gone. On Digital Deli, the commercials that I found for Ron that I gave to you, about 150, were all free, and I was not through looking down the site. So if you wanted to go and see what else they might have up there, you're going to have to scrounge a little bit because that's a big site. But they do have plenty of commercials up there if you just want to hunt them.
Yeah, I know they have a free, shall I say, tour. It's not really a tour, but where you can go in and actually select some programs that they allow and download them for free just to get the hang of what it is. Is that how you got in to get the commercials?
No. It's a special... thing up there, and it's all commercials, one right after the other, after the other, after the other, and they're all free. You just go in there and download the things, you know, one at a time, and they're not in the free programs at all. That's something else entirely different.
Where's that? Sorry, I left you guys for a bit because I had no control on my computer here. It had froze up on me, so... yeah, where is that, Gary? I'd be interested in that.
Okay, John, it's digitaldeliftp.com. That's one site that the FTP is a part of the name of the site. But that's where it is, digitaldeliftp.com.
Thanks a lot.
They may change that free policy if they get a run on them, though.
They might at that. Yeah, I didn't want you guys to... I debated on whether to come back or not, but I said, well, you at least ought to go and explain why you left so rudely.
Well, I wouldn't say it was rudely. No more rudely than a lot of other people who leave and come right back. It's something to do with the Internet. It's not your fault, and we all know it. It's happened to probably all of us at one time or another, so it's no big deal, John.
It was weird because every once in a while I'd try to get him to make a comment after someone else had made one, and I'm holding this darn button down, and it's doing nothing, and the next guy comes in, and then the next guy, and what the heck's going on here? Come to find out, it froze up on me.
Well, John, you know many are cold, but few are frozen.
It has been that around here. We haven't been above 25 degrees around here for a week now.
Get up to around 40, but no more. And I mean, it's dipping into the teens and 20s every night, and looks like no end in sight. So winter's here.
At least we don't have the white stuff that we normally get around here. Although a few places have really gotten zonked. I understand that... even as we speak, upstate New York is really getting slammed. And, of course, we all know about Denver and their activity. But we've been very fortunate here. I don't think we've had more than 5 inches at all winter. And for us, that's pretty rare.
Yeah, Richard Acosta, who's a friend of mine up in upstate New York, He said they canceled his horseback riding and everything else. They're just kind of battening down and hoping the end will come soon because they're really catching it up there.
I'm still waiting my turn for it down here. We had snow one day last week, and it wasn't during the daytime. It was during the night. When I got up the next morning, everything was white, and by noon it was all back to dirt brown and green. What little grass there is around that hasn't died off for the winter.
By the way, I want to declare a public auction on gumballs. That's a ball that, it's a type of tree that makes them. And they're, I guess, kind of seeds for the next generation of darn things. And our yard is just absolutely covered with them. And I'd sell them all for free. Just come haul them off, you know.
It's been a real, real weird winter. I know even spots out there in California have gotten hit this year with the white stuff, so it's crazy.
It's been much warmer in Alaska, up in the Fairbanks area, no less, than it has been here in Indiana or in most places. And we're still in the single digits, like 5 or 6, and with way below wind chill, and then tonight, of course, again, it's going to go sub-zero. So, and that's unusual. We've got 6 inches or 7 on the ground, and that's pretty unusual for Indianapolis. We get it, but then it disappears pretty quickly. So, I don't know what's happening, but the gremlins are out there getting us all.
Yeah, well, like I said, the only good thing I can say about it is that Lisa remembered how to snuggle, and boy, I'm glad she did, too.
I'll bet. Let's hope it doesn't get too warm up north there. It could get a lot wetter down here if it does.
That's true. You mean you didn't buy a snowblower for Lisa?
She has a landscaper that comes by and shovels the snow, thank you.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet? No, no, I won't go into that.
It's better for my health if we don't. Anyway, she's up front on her computer. She has her own computer set up, and she goes and she has her friends up on the chat sites and whatever else. So that child does what she wants, when she wants, as she wants, and I don't tell her nothing.
Don't most women?
She takes it to extremes, though. She's got a black belt in karate, so when she says no, it's no.
This must be related to mine.
It's funny, she's been after me to get her together with Fred's wife, and I don't know if that'd be safe for any of us.
Yeah, I wonder how safe that would be.
As long as it's not Fred, you know, it might be all right.
Why do I get the feeling I need a long vacation?
How long and how far away?
Destination unknown. Length of time unknown.
Now that sounds like it could be good.
Yeah, except she's got all the money.
They usually do.
No, I know it. She's taking care of a little matter for me now on Social Security. They're paying me too much money, if that's possible. And we got to find out what in the world's going on. So she's looking into the matter. She'll get to the bottom of it.
I wish they'd pay me some more.
My problem is, John, they take away $375 a month from me because of, I get workman's comp in addition. So they literally punished me for trying to get off regular disability.
Nice. They are so weird, I'll tell you. Every once in a while, you get these crazy things. Even when you're on SSI and you're doing everything up, and they know exactly what you're bringing in, how you're doing it, and so on and so forth. Then all of a sudden, well, you owe us an extra $700 that we overpaid you.
Been there and done that, only mine was $8,500. Well, I mean, when they did it right. And so I was out in Tucson, and I went to one of the workers out there, a little black gal. And she said, don't worry about it. She said, I'll fix it. I said, what? How you going? $8,500, that's a lot of money. She said, yeah, you bought clothes with it. I said, what? So she writes on the form that I needed it for clothes, and they took it.
That's why you're such a handsome guy. See, you're so well-dressed and all, see?
And has all these women that he told us about earlier.
The thing was, I never saw the clothes, and the money went.
Sure it did.
That's not good. You should have seen something out of all that.
You don't know my ex. That heifer could spend $30,000 in 2 days. I saw her mother do it 3 different times.
I hope she's found a money tree now.
If she has, it ain't the way she found it before.
I was going to say, it's not Gary anymore, I bet.
That's for sure. Where do you think Lisa came into the picture? That's the business manager that runs Gary's life now.
I don't know if it means anything, but my ex told me that her porch light burned out, and she had to go get a red bulb for it.
Oh, gosh. You made that real clear in what you said a while ago. But now we all know for sure. No cause for speculation.
I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
She moved back to New Orleans or Texas. I've forgotten. She's not from New Orleans. She's from Texas, isn't she?
Wrong. She's from Oklahoma. She's back in Muskogee.
That place is so small, she shouldn't need a light bulb.
Didn't Merle Haggard tell us about that place?
He did, but he didn't go into that aspect of it.
I don't know. That white lightning could lead to most anything.
Yeah, Merle's a heck of a nice guy. He, when I got married the first time, I took him, we used to play with him. I was always his opening act for about 14 years if he was in my region. And so I told my ex, I said, look, I'll take you to see him. So, anyway, when he came to town, I took her out there, and he turned around to me and he said, you picking tonight? And I said, no, my wife wanted to meet you. He said, oh, okay, come on. And so he took her, and for about half an hour, they talked, and she got his autograph and things like that.
I'll be done. That's something. You know, he did a show here, and I had gotten permission to tape it, and I had a reel-to-reel at the time. And I'm there at the end of the stage, and my tape recorder's running, of course, and whatnot. And he comes on, he does a couple of numbers, and he looks over my way, and he says, hi, how are you? He says, are you taping? And I shook my head, yes. Yeah, very good. And he says, looks like the tape's running a little slow. Is it supposed to be that slow?
I have one concert that I ain't supposed to have from San Antonio and things like that. I could have taped all of his stuff if I'd have wanted. He said I was the only one that introduced him actually as Old Hag. And I did one of... we did one of his songs to introduce him, and I introduced him as Old Hag. He was cracking up.
Well, like I say, I met him a couple of different times, and nice guy, very nice guy.
He was a little heavy on the suds, but, well, I guess with all that pressure, I don't know, I saw enough of it. Many of my friends, the bottle got them. So, you know, I just got lucky.
It's too bad Joni left the room. I just found something she appreciate.
She left quietly, too. Usually she tells us that she's leaving. I just checked while I go to see who was left and discovered she wasn't here.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people here. There's 248.
I have 60 years of Music America Hates by Spike Jones, if that's music appreciation.
Well, how about dinner music for people who aren't very hungry?
I have that, too.
And that music is deeply appreciated, usually. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in the same room with it.
This is true, nor would you be eating. I also have many episodes of Spike Jones Spotlight Review, where it's actual radio shows, and he has different people as guest stars with him and things like that. It's a regular Spike Jones show.
I think I've come across a couple of those somewhere along the line.
Yeah, well, if you need them, just look in my OTR. They're there.
I got too much to do right now to be looking in other places and where I need to be looking.
That's what my wife said, and she said, by the way, you're too old to do that anyway, so I quit.
Oh, man. A lot could have been said on that one, Fred.
Oh, well, I tried.
Why don't you pull that gun smoke? They've got a better fidelity on it than what you got there, and they've also got a Pepsi thing that they do.
On gun smoke? The Chesterfield show?
It wasn't always sponsored by Chesterfield.
And besides that, it was Chester. It was Mr. Dillon's partner.
That's all right. When Miss Kitty came driving into the marshal's office in her Model T, it was something else.
Good old Miss Kitty.
Do you have an idea that when Mr. Dillon came driving into Miss Kitty's... Well, anyway, you get the picture.
Now, Gary, let's be careful. There are... Joy is still here, and Pat is still here, and Ruth Ann Acosta is here, so be careful.
Yada, yada, yada.
I didn't say anything yet.
I know. That damn shrimp curry will do it every time, won't it?
Without a doubt.
If you don't know, those are lines from the rehearsal for the Gunsmoke episode, The New Hotel.
Notice these others are awful quiet. And Pat chimes in every so often, but the others are awful quiet. We ought to wake a couple of them up.
Well, this has been almost like listening to a radio show with all of the non sequiturs and trying to figure out where things are going. It's been fun.
I was just going to say, Joy has the most to share when it comes to OTR, so I'm just here to listen and enjoy, and there she was.
Well, we did wake one up anyway.
We're going to get Joy to start telling stories here not too long from now, and we'll all be cracking up.
Going to sleep.
And Ruth Ann is just the robot at Bob's in the kitchen or wherever, the downstairs, I don't know where it's at, on the laptop at least. And they're probably listening, so we better be careful.
No, just left the room while Joy was talking. He wasn't even recording with that one. He was just in the room listening, I'm sure.
Yeah, but he didn't want us to know he was listening, so he let his wife sign in.
Well, you kind of figure it's him when she signed in. But normally, if he's away, he's recording. And that was the only machine he had in the room, and it was not recording, so he had to be eavesdropping.
That was like one night. We were up on the site talking, and I said something about Lisa, how beautiful she was, and, you know, this, that, and the other. And Chris said, well, we know where Lisa isn't, because if she'd have been in there, he wouldn't have said that.
Okay.
Oh, it wasn't a nice compliment, for shame.
Of course it was a nice compliment. I always give nice compliments.
Isn't it about time we pause for station identification?
Commercial in my lifetime at the radio station, and I really wish that I had a recording of it. I'm sure it never, well, it was aired a lot in the Fort Wayne area because it was for Old Crown Ale and Beer, which was, you know, a big a big brewery and a big seller in that part of the state, and I guess kind of Midwest. But of course I don't have it. It'd been kind of fun to listen back to it. I was a young kid, about 12 years old, I think, when I did it.
Yeah, we had a radio show for about a year and a half, and Bardol was our sponsor, and I read the Bardol ads and stuff like that, and I don't know why, I just never saved the show. I knew to do it, but we just left the tapes at the station and went in once a week, and of course, we had the old reel-to-reels, and he just reused the tapes. But, yeah, it would have been nice, Pat. That would have been, because I was, I think about 20, 21, something like that. Much younger fella, much more innocent.
I don't know when you were ever innocent, but that's the whole thing. When we were younger, we never thought about how things might be later on in our lives to us, and how much value they would have to us. And so that's just the way it went, you know. We either did foolish things with the things that we had that would be of value, or we just didn't do anything at all with them. As you say, Gary, with your tapes, Pat, with your commercials. Well, there you go, Pat. That's twice tonight. My, your commercial and then that wonderful cardboard sign. I don't know.
I could make more money selling them on eBay now, couldn't I? Than I ever made in my lifetime, I guess.
Probably.
That cardboard sign was so cute, honestly. Just looked exactly like Johnny. All you can imagine, you know, it was very colorful, and he had the thing around his neck, you know, holding the cigarette. It was just so cute, and I was so enthralled with that. All my playmates thought that was really cool. I was always doing shows or something, doing something as a kid with my friends, line them up on the stairway and teach them or something like that. I always seemed to be doing some silly thing. I mean, not really so silly, I guess, and there was kind of, it was play, but it seemed to always have to have a real purpose, while my other friends made mud pies and stuff, and I never got to do all that.
Well, if somebody would go up to hometownfavorites.com and look around, they can even buy those chocolate candy cigarettes and stuff like that. A lot of the candies and gums that were out when we were kids, and you know, I don't know how it got to be, but that's been a year or two ago.
What, a year or two ago that you were a kid?
Couldn't have been much longer than that.
I'm telling you. There's just no way. I can still remember Well, maybe I better not. Anyway, that's the way it goes.
Well, half of what I remember is still around. I mean, you can buy it in the grocery stores today, not have to special order over the net.
I know. I heard earlier that you weren't remembering too much at all.
I have periods like that, and so does Gary. But I'm worse at it than he is.
I don't know, Fred. Mine seems to be progressive. Ever since that brain hemorrhage, it's my short-term memory. I can still come up with it. But I just have to say, wait a minute, I'll get it, just it won't come right now. And about a minute or two later, it'll show up. Bingo, there it is. I knew I'd think of it, you know.
Well, what I hate is I'm sitting here thinking about, well, I need to talk about this, and, you know, and I know all the details and everything. Key my mic open, and it's all gone. I can't remember word one of it. I hate that.
Well, you know, the way I get around that is I write down a note. So I can remind myself what I wanted to talk about when it got to be my turn.
He just has stage fright.
Yeah, right. I've got a book of notes here that I started this evening and probably be on about page 35 before the night's over with.
That's fine, Joy, except it sure is a problem to try to make a note in Braille when you're holding a mic down and everything else. Talk about forget where you were. Wow.
Well, you know, all of those extra little tentacles you've got.
I guess I could learn to write with my tongue. Maybe that'd work. Okay.
I have heard of people doing it with their toes.
Fair. And not just writing either. I mean, having no arms, they write with their feet. They enjoy art. They paint and do all kinds of stuff with their feet.
I wonder if their favorite song is Fast Actin' Tenactin.
I don't know, but I heard of one person with that particular disability, if you will, who ate barbecued ribs in public. That I would not have wanted to see.
Yeah, but look at all the money they save on shoes.
Got that right.
You can always get a positive out of a negative.
Usually, if you give it a little thought.
Although sometimes you really have to stretch.
Very true. A little thought isn't anywhere near enough.
Especially when you get to our ages.
Well, that's when you hire gag writers.
Yeah, it's just my luck. They'd read the jokes that I wrote and gagged. Anyway.
Well, I think I'm going to cut it out. Again, it's been a pleasure as every week. And it's getting better because I'm learning more voices and whatnot. And I know who Pat is. I know who Joy is. I know who Joni is, of course, Fred, Gary, of course, and so this is very nice, and I'm really, really having a ball with it on Thursday night, and I look forward to it every week. You guys have a great week, and we'll catch you down the line.
Have a good evening, John, and I, too, will go off into the sunset. I've got some inventory stuff to work on. Bye.
Good night, all.
Good night, Joy. Good night, John. We'll see you all next week.
Stay out of mischief, Joy. I know it'll be hard, but, I mean, well, you're the one that's supposed to keep order around here, and if you don't do it, who will?
You mean we're all going to hell in a handbasket otherwise?
I think we've bypassed the handbasket, but we'll make it.
We'll get there somehow, huh, Gary?
Yes, sir. I'm getting my counter spies this time, by the way. The Bone Man is putting them on cassette for me. I've still got to convert them to MP3, but at least they're coming.
Okay, those don't exist on MP3 now, correct?
Some of them may, but an awful lot of them won't. Yeah, we'll get there eventually.
Okay, because I have, I don't know, several, at least. I don't want to say quite a few because I may not. But I'm thinking that one, Dangerous Assignment, a couple of those spy-type shows I have quite a few of. And I don't know if that's the one that I have the most of or not.
In our circles, the biggest collection was 59, and I had those. And then I got some from Digital Deli. And then now these, and he's got over 100, I think, 113 or something like that. So we ought to get some new anyway. I'm going to have to dream up some stuff for Pat. She apparently she's getting crazy about downloading here, and I wouldn't want to sell her short. I've got plenty of stuff I know she wants. But she's going to have to tell me what it is that she wants so I can put it over there.
I'm sure she'll want to bury Craig when we get through with it. I accidentally hit the wrong key and went clear out of the room. I don't even see my, counter spy. Here it is. Hang on. I got 27.
There were 20 or 22 Johnny Chase spacemen, and I've got all of it.
I haven't even heard of him. You mentioned it the other day, but other than that, I haven't heard of that show.
It's a Canadian. We can always send it to Deb.
You know, some of those Canadian shows are top-notch, and some of them, well, like the U.S., you know, they just kind of fell flat on their faces, but oh well.
Yeah, it's kind of like Nightfall, too. They get really confusing sometimes.
I wonder if they have their own version of Singing Cowboy.
Yeah, it's called a Listerine commercial.
I must be getting tired, and it's not even 10 o'clock yet. Of course, I did get up at 4:20 this morning. Couldn't get back to sleep. So I lay down about 8:30 and slept for 2 hours.
Sounds about like my routine. I'll go around 11 and be out like a light till about 2:30. And then I'll just wake up and I'll be up for 2 to 4 hours reading and rousting and whatever else. My back won't let me sleep straight through.
I need to take some time and listen to this great radio soaps. I've heard the first chapter and it's good. It's well done. I like it. It seems like there's not enough hours in the day.
One Man's Other Family?
No, it's a Jim Cox book. It's pretty well done.
All right, Pat, what's for the midnight snack?
I think I'm going to have coconut cream pie.
That'll work. We're having a vanilla instant pudding.
This is from a local cafeteria, and I do believe they do it what you call from scratch, because it is delicious. But instant pudding does it, too.
Yeah, you can throw a handful of coconut in it, and what could you use for crust? Graham cracker? I don't know.
I don't like graham cracker crust too well, even though they do it on cheesecake and everything. They do real pie crust on this, but yes, you could do that, and then put some whipped cream on top in place of meringue, I guess. I think this pie has meringue on it. But they have to be so careful with meringue in restaurants, so it may not be meringue at all.
You know, Gary has to be careful with his sugar intake.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Speaking of sugar intake, I know now what it was I was going to ask Joy while she was here with her infinite fountain of knowledge. I heard, so I know they're there, in about 73, a guy heard broadcast them over the air a series of Little Ebner with Ma and Paul Kittle and Daisy May and people like that. It is out, and I remember it as a boy, but I'm yet to see even a whisper of it anywhere.
Boy, that would be a find if you could. I never, of course, heard that there ever was anything like that aired.
Well, I know that I know they exist because I've seen them too. In fact, I think I had some, but they're probably with my CD of my missing CD of Cisco Kids. But Fiorello LaGuardia used to read the funny papers, and that was one of the strips he read out all the time.
No, this was dramatized, Fred, full-blown. I mean, it was a show.
I realize that. Yeah, I say I've seen them somewhere, and I may even have one or two, but if I do, they're with my missing CD of Cisco.
Yeah, well, that's just like my Lou Archer thing. I told Larry 15 years ago it existed, and he said, no, it don't. I said, oh, yes, it does. And come to find out, the Bone Man has 12 of them. So I know darn well they exist. It's just these guys don't like to test my memory and lose. That's what it is. But I was there, and I can remember back around 48, 49, 50, around in there when those things were on, I still remember. And can even tell you some of the plots to the stories.
I seem to be having trouble with my control key tonight. Not working right. Yeah, and there's a couple other series like that, too. Not that Larry said that doesn't exist, because I've never mentioned them to him. But, like Little Abner's, there's a couple of that type of series out there yet. Gasoline Alley, of course, which has quite a few episodes available. I don't remember what all else. I was just looking to see.
Yeah, well, that's just like, no, I didn't get it. I got The Affairs of Peter Salem, which he had one, but The Affairs of Dr. Gentry, was out about that same time, and I don't know how many of those he's got, probably one. I just didn't get them. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff still out there, good stuff, if we can just find it.
That's the trick, finding it.
Well, they've come up in about the last 6 months with enough stuff to thoroughly screw up our logs and all of our research and everything else. I mean, it's a mess now. Until they settle down, somebody's been sitting on probably about 40, 50,000 shows. And once they get fanned out and halfway squared away and whatever else, then we can get back to organizing. But boy, it's a pain right at the minute.
Tell me about it. I understand Spurtvac is sitting on, of course, those shows are readily available to catalog from their catalog, but they're sitting on a bunch of shows that are only available in a taped format, and they're supposedly going to release eventually, sporadically.
You mean Bob Lyons is going to burp?
I don't know. They may be waiting for him to leave town or something.
Yeah, but whatever it is, I mean, he'd hurry up and go. That's one character I don't... Well, don't get me started.
I have no desire to. But, oh, here's that other folder Garrison Keillor my wife was talking about. It's in my F drive. Starts off with Pontoon Boat, and it's got a prologue, an author, and home, forebearers.
Well, now, why don't I have it?
I just found it. And I can probably shoot it up to you tonight if you want it. It's got... looks like about 17 Lake Wobegons in here.
Yeah, he's... I have the Lake Wobegon book. And... but you never can tell. He keeps adding and adding and adding as stories come. And so it's really hard to tell now if you've got everything or not. And then plus he's got... You can go up on the website and download about 4 or 5 months back of the Prairie Home Companion shows if you want them. So his stuff is there, but I just wish he'd get it in some sort of order.
Yeah, this is all 48 and 64K encodes and from 1990. The lengths vary all the way from 4 minutes up to... I don't see anything that's actually 30 minutes, 23. Oh, no, here's one that's 36. So they vary in length. And like I say, there's about 16, 17 with a text descriptor in here.
Yeah, well, I've got a reel that's about 6.5 hours probably of nonstop Garrison Keillor from 74 to 94. And it's really a super, but I got to get it converted over to CD. It'll probably take, I don't know, 3 or 4 CDs at least to get it all converted. And there's just so much stuff that I've got to do coming off reel. One of these days, I'm just going to have to virtually hang up everything and do a heap of ripping, but that's supposed to be Lisa's job, and I'm waiting for her to do it, and she's waiting for me, so... I don't know. We'll get there sooner or later.
If I had the equipment, I would do it, too, but I don't have any... I've got the software, but I don't have any of the equipment, like tape decks or turntables or any of that. So, I don't know.
Oh, thank you. You're so nice. I want to read a little bit from a book that I've been working on for a long time. Actually, still am kind of working on it. Even though it's in print, doesn't mean a guy can't dress it up a little bit.
That's part of the prologue to whatever this is.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. He's still adding to. And you say, well, okay, I've got the complete, and then next week he'll come out with something new, and you say, oh, no. You know.
And it gets strange sometimes, but I don't know. I still like his writer's almanac that he does every day. I'm sure he probably sits down and does a month's worth at a time since they're only 5 minutes long and they do air 7 days a week. But, you know, they're still good.
And he's got his finger in a lot of pies, but I like him better. Before he left Wobegon and went to New York, Now that scrambled his eggs nice and proper. That didn't go right. I'm glad he's back now in Minneapolis, St. Paul, where he belongs.
Yeah, it fits him and his style much better there. I'll have to find my CD of Guy Noirs too for you.
Okay. Well, I suppose that if we're not going to do anything constructive, I'll go ahead and get out of here. Pat hadn't told me what else she wants, so if she can't dream up nothing, I'll have to see what I can do. But anyway, I'll go ahead and go and go up there and have my snack and pester Lisa a while. Never can tell what she might get into.
See, I hesitate to ask for anything more until I get down what you've already given me. But when I get those down finally, I don't know why it keeps timing out for me, but I've got almost, but not quite. Then I'll tell you. I'll think of some things, or you do put things that you know I'll like, and I enjoyed every doggone one of them and appreciate it.
Yeah, well, like I said, if I know what you want and I've got it, I'll just put them over there in your folder.
I'll sure let you know, and I'll keep watching my folder.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll keep right on working, cleaning stuff up, and getting it ready, and getting it up there. Where you can, all you have to do is ask for it, and it'll be there.
Yeah, I'm gonna. God knows I got about 4 major projects that I'm in the midst of doing now, and it's gonna take forever. But I'll go ahead and this week start on my cabinet, and if I see it, I'll pull that Joe Stafford and a few more things back there that I just happen to have floating around that I know I've got them, but they're on CD, not on my hard drive, and I'll see what I can do. That's about 300 songs, I think, in that collection. It's a big one, and so I'll drop it up. It's another Joe Stafford thing, and then we'll see what comes down from there. So that's about going to do it from here.
I sure enjoyed the Joe Staffords, and I thought that was a big collection. Didn't have any clue that she had a lot more. But I had downloaded that some time ago, too, from the general folder. And boy, I like her. I do enjoy her singing very, very much.
Now, you know that there's some June Christie and... What is that group of sisters? Denning Sisters. See, that's what I mean. I've got some of that up there. And there's a whole batch of stuff. Now, you won't find Crosby and Clooney in that crap, but I got a lot of stuff without it. So, like I say, if it's something, the Boswell Sisters are here, the McGuire's, the Andrews Sisters are up here. I may have the Fontaine Sisters. I'm really not sure. But an awful lot of Perry Como. Now, if you want to just have me be on the lookout for Como, I've got scads of Como, both on vinyl and on MP3. So, you know, just tell me some stuff that you want, and as I find it, I'll stick it up.
Keep me in mind for Como. I love Perry Como. Honestly, I don't think I have any. I may have had on an LP, but I don't have anything else. I know that I play now, you know, so keep me in mind for that. I'll appreciate that, Gary.
Now, did you get that yesterday and today's set?
Disc? Are you talking to me?
I am. I just put a Perry Como set up there of yesterday and today. That's the name of it. I may have put that in Randa's folder, and if I did, I'll just switch it to yours.
No, I haven't seen it, so I don't know that it's in mine. So it might be in someone else's.
Okay, see, that's why I said you have to, and lately now I'm getting I'm not quite as sharp as I used to be. If I tell you I'm going to do something and you haven't seen it in, say, a week or so, remind me, because I do tend to forget now a lot more than I did.
Well, you're forgiven, Gary. We all have problems remembering sometimes, but certainly we understand your problem, and I will. I mean, I'll let you know, and I poke around, look around other folders too, in case it is in somebody else's folder.
Well, that, and I'll put back in yours, but I don't care if you go looking in other people's folders. That's not. In fact, she's got some Doc Watson over there now that I'll leave over there a while before I move it. It's Randa, R-A-N-D-A. And it's in that same directory. You just have to go to a different folder instead of yours.
Well, I can go to that folder. I have not been in that folder at all. But I can go there to get the Perry Como's. There's no problem with that. Just when I know where they're at.
Okay. Well, I don't like to tell Fred that because Fred, well, he's got everything, you know, and he keeps saying, why do you keep saying all these things that you know I've already got?
Yeah, go in my folder and look around, Pat. You'll get lost in there.
Well, you know, quite honestly, yours is one I do look in, and believe me, I have gotten lost. I don't even recognize for sure, you know, would I want this or don't I want this? And I don't want to be greedy. You know, I really like to download things that I'm going to listen to and enjoy. Seriously, when I don't know what they, you know, don't really know if they're just something you put up for you and Gary to work on or something, I think, well, I better wait till I see a little more series or something of these.
No, if you want to take them early, you can do that. We don't care. But if you want to wait, they're in a folder called Fixed Files. And that means we've already dealt with them and whatever. But, yeah, you go looking around up there all you want to. I don't care.
Sure, treasure trove, that's for sure.
I don't know. I've been posting that Garrison Keillor stuff up there to Fixed Files, and she probably wouldn't want that.
I don't know if I would or not. I can give a listen before I download, can I?
Yeah, either that or download one or two and listen, see if you like them, the way he tells his stories and what have you. You might, you know, that would be one way to get it. I don't have it fixed where you can play without downloading. You're going to have to download a file before you hear it. That's the only thing.
Yeah, and that is an 8-chapter book. Let's see, the name of that book is The Guy's Book by Garrison Keillor. And the very first guy starts off with talking about how great his life is and so on. It's kind of about plain people and how plain people Garrison Keillor can be. And the very first guy the chapter's on has leprosy that he got, well, oh, how did he put that? Living in an African tribe surrounded by mud huts, in his white picketed fence, what was it, 3-bedroom home or whatever it was. I don't remember exactly how he put it. It's pretty much out there.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Yeah, that's what I really thought when I said, you know, I'd listen, but I meant download too, because I don't like to tie up anybody's site, and when you can download and then listen at your own, you know, convenience and not tied up for other people. I don't think I ever listen on anybody's site, and I, of course, don't go to very many sites. So that's cool. That sounds really good, though.
Now, what we do, if I know you're going to be downloading at night, and you get better speed at night, so if there's something you want, you know, by all means, I'll just leave the computer on. But otherwise, I go ahead and turn it off if nobody's on it. So if you're going to be downloading, you know, let me know if you can. Because, boy, it's a 600-watt power supply in this sucker. And that does take a little juice, and if it's just going to sit there idle, I'd just soon save the money.
I don't blame you, and I do try to do it down, you know, during the daytime for that very reason. But if I get, you know, if I need to, I'll do that. I mean, if I need, you know, think I want to hurry up and get something down, I'll let you know. But otherwise, I try to do it during normal working hours.
Yeah, like 6 a.m. to 6 a.m.? Yeah, right. Okay.
Something like that. Yeah. Maybe mine's like about 3 in the morning. I think your sleep pattern sounded like mine. I get up at 2 and I'm up for 4 hours and then I nap for an hour or two and then I go back again for the same reason that you do. So it's really hard to say with my pattern, but I have to be alert during the day because the phone rings. Now that I don't have a phone, may have one tomorrow, but I have to call about that. But anyhow, I could just work and do something else all day, couldn't I?
Yeah, well, Fred and I usually check in on Skype somewhere around noon or something like that. We manage to get it going, and then we'll work for a while, get tired, and, or go to a meeting or whatever. And so it works out. We just have a shorter day than most.
It's fun to be able to do that, really.
All right, well, it's 10:20. I'm going to go ahead and have her fix the snack and see if I can get her to bed early. Because she gets cranky if she stays up too late, and I don't want that. I'd just soon have her go to bed and go sleep, you know, like a good baby.
Well, I don't blame you.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. It's just much better if everybody's well-rested and more friendly.
Cranky spouses can be really awesome and awful.
Being Pat, the Dexter.
Hi, Dexter. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Everything back here quiet now after the storm?
Yes.
Where's Corliss?
I don't know.
I mean, Corliss and Dexter were always together, you know?
That's right. I thought there was something like that, but I couldn't get it together.
Ah, yes. The young and beautiful Miss Archer. Oh, she's an archer?
Now, how come she's not an archeress?
Let me think on that one, and I'll let you know next week.
Oh, I see Fred's going to do some research. I was going to say, I don't even know if there's a word like that. Of course, there's lots of words that are being made up that are going into the dictionaries now. So we could probably put that there if it isn't already a bona fide word.
Dexter, don't mind us. We're just about half crazy and it's getting late.
No kidding. I'm getting punchy. I've run across Archer Ombudsman, a whole bunch of them up on BBC stuff.
You know what? You helped expose me to some of these really out of the United States OTR, and I don't know, I guess I shouldn't say this because I don't have enough of a track record or experience in comparing, but it almost seems to me like there was this more, I don't know, better than acting or, you know, just, I'm real impressed, in other words, with the drama and all from Australia and South Africa and the BBC and all that. It just seems like that it's excellent. And sometimes some of ours wasn't quite as good in the ones I've listened to, I guess.
I think it's all in the writing, or a good portion of it is in the writing, plus the fact that with BBC shows, they don't use the music like we used to. They tend to be kind of plain. Now, that Blair of the Mounties had an opening theme and an ending theme, and there wasn't any music in between. That's the extreme. But our programs were probably, you know, between the bridges and the opening and closing themes, they're probably a good 15-20% music, even like shows like The Lone Ranger.
I never thought about that, but what few I've listened to, that is true.
It leaves them a little bit more time to develop the story and the characters. And most of the British shows, very few half-hour shows unless they're comedies. The dramatic shows are either 45 minutes, an hour, and I have some that are hour and a half and some that are 2 hours as a single file. But they do develop their characters better because they have the time to do it.
I can't remember what the show was that was sponsored by Yum Yum Peanut Butter, but it was a very good one. And that's what I was referring to tonight when you were talking about commercials.
Sort of reminds me that what you said fits in with the American way of life. Rush, rush, rush to get nowhere or not figure out where you're going. Where it seems some of the other nations are a lot more laid back and more careful in their planning.
I know they're more careful in their planning because, and I sent Gary the article about a series that was, and I can't remember the name offhand of what series it was, but it's a well-known series, and most people think of it as being a South African series when in fact it was Grace Gibson out of Australia. And there's a big discrepancy in numbering between the Australian version of the show and the South African version of the show, and they renumbered them because there were so many shows that might have been offensive or demeaning to blacks in South Africa that they just flat deleted them from the series. You know, they had to be real careful with that.
That's Interests Unknown.
Yeah, and everybody thinks that's a BBC show, and it's not. It's Grace Gibson all the way.
All right, well, I'm out. I'll catch you all later on.
Good night.
Yeah, I think I'm going to follow suit. It's 10:30. I need to go to bed myself.
And since I haven't eaten since breakfast early today, I think I'd better go get my snack, too. So good night, all, whoever's left. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Good night. Dexter's still in the room, so we'll talk at you later.
Bye.